This is William Fink, and this is the Christogenia European Fellowship Forum. I have a few announcements to make. The Christogenia New Testament has been revised. The corrections that were in the errata pages at Christogenia.org have been made. And soon, within this month, I mean, the ball has already been rolled on it. It's just up to the the wheels of commerce, right, the gears of commerce. Soon the Christogenia New Testament will be available, will be listed in the catalogs of Barnes & Nobles and Amazon.com. And there is one British company, and I forget the name of it, that was listed specifically, but it should be available in the catalogs of most of the major large retailers. That doesn't mean that they'll stock it, of course, but it will be available for order. It would still be cheaper, though, on Lulu.com, because on Lulu.com, where it's being published, that there will be no retailer markup, right? As a matter of convenience, it'll be found at those retailers, but there'll be no markup at Lulu, and it'll be cheaper there. That's just the way it is. The past couple of weeks, I've concentrated on Christ-like, a commentary on the Revelation. That's going to be the final title of my Revelation commentary. It's basically the material I presented in the podcasts. I'll embellish it where I can. It's in the editing stages now. And I'm hoping, I'm actually going to hope to have it up on Lulu and available at the end of this month, at the end of September, or by the end of September. That's my goal. And barring any unforeseen problems, I should be able to reach it. Today, I'm going to talk about a couple of things. I'm going to talk about a concept, which is from the Matthew programs that I've done recently, Matthew chapters 24 and 25 specifically. And this might be, I'm thinking about making this the next Saxon Messenger editorial. There shall be no good fruit from among the Jews forever. From Luke chapter 13, verse 6, we read this parable from Yahshua Christ. A man had a fig tree planted in his vineyard, and when he came seeking fruit in it and found none, and he said to the vine dresser, "Look, it is 3 years from which I have come seeking fruit in this fig tree, and I find none. Cut it down, for why should the land be useless?" But answering, he says to him, "Master," the vine dresser, "Master, leave it this year also, until when I should dig around it and cast manure, and so that it may produce fruit in the future. But otherwise, if not, you shall cut it down." Following the feasts and the Passovers, which are specifically counted in the Gospel of John, we see that the ministry of Christ did indeed endure for 3.5 years. By this we are assured that Christ used the symbol of this fig tree in his parable to represent Jerusalem in his day, and the 3 years and then a fourth were representative of his ministry. From Matthew chapter 21, verse 18, we see this. Then at dawn, talking about Christ and his travels back and forth to Jerusalem, then at dawn, going back to the city, he hungered, and seeing one fig tree by the road, he came upon it and found nothing in it except leaves only. And he says to it, "No longer shall there be fruit from you forever." And immediately the fig tree withered. The cutting down of the fig tree actually happened in 70 AD. Speaking of this very same thing, the Apostle Luke records the later words of Christ thus from Luke chapter 21, verse 20, where Christ says, "But when you see Jerusalem being surrounded by armies, then you know that her desolation has come near. Then those in Judea must flee into the mountains." And we see in the histories of Josephus that at this very time, this did happen, and the good people of Jerusalem did flee into the mountains. "And those in her midst must leave the land, And those in the countryside must not enter into her. Because these are the days of vengeance. Yahweh, I must say, punishes his people Israel, but he only takes vengeance upon his enemies. Punishment has mercy, vengeance has no mercy. Because these are the days of vengeance. By which all the things written are to be fulfilled. I would say, all the things concerning Jerusalem. All the things written concerning Jerusalem would be fulfilled. When the city becomes Jeremiah's broken bottle city. As we see in Jeremiah chapter 19. That Jerusalem would be as a broken bottle, never to be made whole again. That happened in 70 AD. Christ goes on to continue in Luke 21:23, "Woe to those having conceived and to those with sucklings in those days, for there shall be great violence upon the earth and wrath for this people, and they shall fall by the edge of the sword, and they shall be taken away captive into all nations, and Jerusalem shall be tread upon by the heathens until the times of the heathens should be fulfilled." This language is almost the same as we find in Jeremiah chapter 24 concerning the bad figs of Jerusalem. So I will read Jeremiah chapter 24 from verse 1. It's a short chapter. "Yahweh showed me, and behold, two baskets of figs were set before the temple of Yahweh. After that, Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, had carried away captive Jeconiah, the son of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, and the princes of Judah with the carpenters and smiths from Jerusalem." Let me state that Daniel was among them, and so was Ezekiel. "And it brought them to Babylon. One basket had very good figs, even like the figs that are first ripe. The other basket had very naughty figs, which could not be eaten. They were so bad. Then said Yahweh unto me, What do you see, Jeremiah? And I said, Figs, the good figs, very good, and the evil, very evil, that cannot be eaten. They are so evil. Again the word of Yahweh came to me, saying, Thus saith Yahweh, the God of Israel, Like these good figs, so I will acknowledge them that are carried away captive of Judah, whom I have sent out of this place into the land of the Chaldeans, for their good. For I will set mine eyes upon them for good, and I will bring them again to this land, and I will build them and not pull them down, and I will plant them and not pluck them up." Those people, you can be assured, became Christians. "And I will give them a heart to know me, that I am Yahweh. And they shall be my people, and I will be their God. For they shall return unto me, they will return unto me, with their whole heart," that can only be in Christ. "And as the evil figs, which cannot be eaten, they are so evil. Surely thus saith Yahweh, so I will give Zedekiah the king of Judah and his princes, all the principal men, and the residue of Jerusalem that remain in this land, and them that dwell in the land of Egypt, and I will deliver them to be removed into all the kingdoms of the earth, for their hurt, to be a reproach and a proverb, a taunt and a curse in all the places where I shall drive them." The residue of the city, the people that remained in Jerusalem, could not have been driven off until 70 AD. "And I will send a sword, the famine, and the pestilence among them, till they be consumed from off the land that I gave unto them and to their fathers." Some of their fathers were Abraham and Isaac and Jacob and the other patriarchs. But they race mixed, and therefore they became bad figs. That they race mixed is evident in Jeremiah chapter 2, where it says, "For my people have committed two evils. They have forsaken me, the fountain of living waters," which we see as Christ in the New Testament, "and hewed them out cisterns, broken cisterns, that can hold no water. Yet I had planted thee a noble vine, wholly a right seed. How then art thou turned into the degenerate plant of a strange vine unto me? For though thou wash thee with nitre, and take thee much soap, yet thy iniquity is marked before me, saith Yahweh God. Notice that the language of Jeremiah 24:8-9 is very similar to the language of Luke 21:23-24. They're talking about the same thing. Those enemies of Yahweh claiming to be Judah, but they are actually the synagogue of Satan instead, who Jude and John and Peter all describe as those who had actually infiltrated Judah. That's how Judah became a strange vine when Yahweh planted a pleasant plant. Jeremiah chapter 29, verses 17 to 19. Thus saith Yahweh of hosts, behold, I will send upon them the sword, the famine, and the pestilence, and will make them like vile figs that cannot be eaten. They are so evil. And I will persecute them with the sword, with the famine, and with the pestilence, and will deliver them to be removed to all the kingdoms of the earth, to be a curse, and an astonishment, and a hissing, and a reproach among all the nations whither I drive them. This is the same language we see in Luke of the people of Jerusalem who rejected Christ, because they have not hearkened to my words, and they didn't hearken to the words of Christ. Of course, we know that they weren't supposed to. Which I sent unto them by my servants the prophets, rising up early and sending them, but ye would not hear, saith Yahweh. The bad figs of Judah were punished by Yahweh into being like vile figs that cannot be eaten. This can only describe those Canaanite, Edomite, Judeans, whom the real Judahites had mixed with. The real Judahites who would not hearken to the words of Yahweh had mixed with these Canaanites and Edomites. So it can only describe those Canaanite, Edomite, Judeans who rejected Christ, along with the fate of any true Israelites in Judea who followed them and therefore never accepted Christ and never accepted the gospel. John, in the 12th chapter of his gospel, tells us that the rejection of Christ by the people of Jerusalem was a fulfillment of things written in the prophet Isaiah, and indeed it was. Then John goes on to say, chapter 12, verse 42, yet likewise, even many of the leaders believed in him, they believed Christ. And we see Nicodemus in the gospel, right? John chapter 3. But on account of the Pharisees, remember Nicodemus came to Christ secretly at night in John chapter 3. On account of the Pharisees, they would not profess it, lest they would be expelled from the assembly hall. For they cherished the honor of men more than even the honor of Yahweh. And so we have the state of Christianity today, but especially in Christian identity, and more especially in the British Israel variety. But we see it in America in the one-seedliners, the non-seedliners. Men want to think, they want to think that they could be good figs which came from Jerusalem, even though the ancestors of those people were those deniers of Christ, who would be a curse and a reproach and a taunt, driven into all nations and punished. These men did not believe Christ because, as John tells us, they cherished the honor of man more than they cherished the honor of God. If Christ tells us that there would never again be any good fruit having come from that fig tree which represented Jerusalem, which was permanently and irrecoverably withered, how can men esteem otherwise without being deniers of Christ? John the Baptist knew that the gospel would separate the wheat from the tares, Therefore, John exclaimed that already the axe is laid to the root of the trees. Surely any tree not producing good fruit is cut down and cast into the fire. That is the fate of the tares. Matthew 3:10. Yahshua Christ told us to keep away from the false prophets who come to you in sheep's clothing, but inwardly they are rapacious wolves. You shall know them from their fruits. Does anyone gather grapes from thorns or figs from thistles? No, so we don't gather the children of God from the tares, because the tares can't be children of God, like thorns can't be grapes and thistles can't be figs. Thusly, every good tree produces fine fruit, or good fruit, but the rotten tree produces evil fruit. A good tree does not produce evil fruit. Even the British Israel people would say, would admit, that trees in the Bible represent races of people. Nor is a rotten tree able to produce good fruit. Period. End of story. A rotten tree cannot produce good fruit. The withered fig tree, which would produce no good fruit forever, cannot produce good fruit. Each tree not producing fine fruit is cut down and cast into the fire. Indeed, from their fruits you shall know them. There are, therefore, no good Jews. Period. The end. End of story right there. Christ said no good fruit would come from Jerusalem again forever. There's no exception. A bad tree cannot produce good fruit, as Christ tells us in Matthew chapter 7. Yair Davidy, Nathaniel Kapner, and all the others like them, they are deceivers and they are liars born of liars. They seem to act for good when they are really being deceitful, contrary to the words of Christ, and misleading the sheep. When we embrace them, we become partakers of their evil works, as John tells us in 2 John, verses 9 to 11. Christ said that there would be no good fruit from Jerusalem forever. And we had better believe him. British Israel Christians, Judeo-Christians, and all who have ever held otherwise make themselves deniers of Christ in favor of his enemies. Psalm 139:19-22. Surely thou wilt slay the wicked, O God. Depart from me, therefore, ye bloody men, for they speak against thee wickedly, and thine enemies take thy name in vain. I don't care how many times Yair Davidy calls on the name of Yahweh, or how many times Nathaniel Kapner tries to set himself aside as a good Jew, they call on the name of God in vain, because they can't possibly ever be good fruit, thus are the words of Christ. Do not I hate them, O Yahweh, that hate thee, and am I not grieved with those that rise up against thee? I hate them with a perfect hatred, and I count them my enemies. That's black and white. There's no gray in between. If you came out of Jerusalem in 70 AD denying Christ, there's no good fruit from you forever. His blood is on us and our children. Period. There can't be a good Jew. When Christians learn that, then, and only then, may we begin any semblance of a healing process. That's it. That's all I have to say on that topic, unless there are any questions or further discussion from you people, because it's a short presentation, but it's to the point. It's again, it's something right plainly evident in the New Testament that most Christians miss, even a lot of Christians in Christian identity. And that's sad. Okay, this is an open forum. I hope somebody else has something to say besides me. I know there's a few familiar and regular faces missing today. Maybe they didn't realize that this open forum was going to be so early in the month. I mean, I know the first Thursday happened to fall on the 1st. And if they don't show up, well, hopefully they'll be here in 2 weeks. Dorcas, Taya, somebody.
the days of vengeance, which are applied to Yahshua's enemies, that's the marriage supper of the Lamb.
Well, yes. And we have to remember that when Christ said that, he was answering three questions.
Of course, yes.
Right? Course. And the same answer applies to all three questions. One of them being, when will these things be? Meaning the destruction of Jerusalem, when Christ said that no stone would be left upon another. And the other two questions having to do with his coming and the end of the age. And I believe, and I hope to have demonstrated in my presentation of Matthew chapters 24 and 25 the last 2 weeks, that those answers apply to both times, right? So these are the days of vengeance. His enemies have not changed. They were destroyed to a great degree in 70 AD. From 65 to 70 AD, according to Josephus, and Josephus's account is very credible, and it's very credible once one understands the populations at the time in Palestine. Josephus says that 1.1 million Judeans were killed during the five-year war in Palestine. And I think that's a very plausible number. Paul had told the Romans that they would crush Satan under their feet shortly. And to a very great degree, they did when they destroyed Jerusalem and they destroyed a lot of the power of the Pharisees and Sadducees in Jerusalem. And even though the people we know as Jews dispersed, especially after 120 AD with the Bar Kokhba rebellion, that they dispersed throughout the Oikumene, and they were to a point already dispersed throughout the Roman world. And they caused much trouble for Christians for the next 300 years. Those things are in fulfillment of many of the prophecies. But because of the destruction of Jerusalem in 70 AD, the power of Satan in the Roman world that time was indeed greatly decreased. And at the return of Christ and the marriage supper of the Lamb, his enemies will be permanently destroyed. So the answer and the question have to do with both times, right?
In the Isaiah 56, you know, speaking about British Israel, unless one really has a grasp of prophecy and an understanding, one can easily be led astray. I mean, reading Isaiah 56, verse 3, do not let the son of the foreigner who has joined himself to the Lord speak, saying, the Lord has utterly separated me from his people. Nor let the eunuch say, here I am a dry tree. For thus saith the Lord, to the eunuch to keep my Sabbath, to choose what pleases me, and hold fast my covenant, even to them I will give in my house and within my walls a place and a name better than that of sons and daughters. I will give them an everlasting name and they shall not be cut off. Well, to anybody who hasn't got an understanding of they would assume that that meant the sons of the foreigners, and it encompassed other people. It's very, very difficult And this one's given special understanding from the Almighty. One can easily misread and not understand scripture.
Well, the understanding, I believe, from God comes through the reading, the careful reading and frequent reading of scripture. And believing the scripture as it is read. If we would believe the scripture as it is read, we would understand, we would come to the understanding that the last 25 chapters of Isaiah are all written to the dispersion of Israel, who had been put off by God, who had been alienated. And therefore, the foreigner is an alienated Israelite who was separated from the people of God, right? Separated from his people. In other words, he couldn't have been somebody who was separated in the first place, because Israel was separated from everybody, according to the word of God, back in Exodus chapter 19. So for this foreigner to have been separated from the people of God, he would have to be one of the people of God in the first place. It's very simple. If we believe the word of God, we can decipher the word of God. If we don't believe the word of God, then we're never going to be able to figure it out, right? That's where understanding comes from. That the son of the stranger is the son of that Israelite who has been estranged. And Yahweh will put his children who actually cling to his covenants and his laws, even when they're not compelled to, because these people were no longer compelled. They were divorced. They were no longer compelled to keep the law. But Yahweh would give those people who chose to, of their own volition, a special place in his kingdom. That's what he's saying here. Now, the eunuch and the dry tree are the Israelites that were put off. But if they take hold of the covenant, if they keep it in spite of not being any longer compelled to keep it, they would be given a grander reward than those who didn't keep it, right?
Yeah.
Now, Yahweh here foresaw universalism just like Christ in the parable of the net predicted universalism. And he says, thus saith Yahweh, who gathers the outcasts of Israel. So we can't imagine. He doesn't say Yahweh gathers the outcasts of Israel and the Gentiles. It says Yahweh gathers the outcasts of Israel in Isaiah 56:8. That's all he gathers. And yet I will gather others unto him besides those that are gathered unto him, that are gathered to him, that others is added to the text. And he's talking about the dispersion of Israel, that he will get all of them. And they're more numerous than we perceive, right? And they're more numerous even than the apostles perceive. Peter didn't get, you know, Peter and John and James, they didn't understand the extent of the dispersion of the children of Israel when they were given the gospel message to carry to the other nations of the world, to the other Adamic nations. They didn't understand that most of those people were Israel. That's why Peter needed that vision. And Peter's vision doesn't mean that Peter could legitimately take the gospel message to other races, because when we read Peter's vision in Acts chapter 10, Yahweh tells Peter, don't call common what I have cleansed. Well, what did he cleanse? He only cleansed the children of Israel. Yes. So we can't take Acts chapter 10 outside of the scope of Jeremiah 31:31.
But until this point in our history, we've never had a comprehensive Bible study. We've had people writing articles here and there, but fortunately now we are having a true teaching. It's sort of not chopped about, so people find it hard to comprehend it. And it's only at this moment in time to Clifton and yourself that we are having the whole picture spelt out to us. So there must be some meaning in that at the same time, that at last we're having true teaching. I don't think, you know, just reading, I've read the Bible through several times, but I can't remember. You come to so-and-so begat so-and-so, and then you skip a few bits, and you have a rough idea, but we're now going into depth, and I appreciate that. But it's only in the recently that's happened.
Yeah, there seems to be so many layers that we're pulling back, and it makes it so exciting and so fresh. Very good.
Well, all that being said, revelation comes in stages, right? And that's the way it always is. You know, we owe a debt, Kirsten and I owe a debt to Tampa Ray and Swift, and that they may not have been where we are, but there may be somebody that comes along in a couple of years and makes us look silly, right? That's the way it is.
Yes, it's like stepping stones, isn't it?
Well, right, that is the way it is. You can't, you have to, but you can't say that I know. You can never say that I know.
Yeah,
that to me is what the British Israel people have done. They said, we know, so immediately they stopped growing.
Yes, absolutely. And that, I think, is what's happening with the small group that we had. You know, the offshoot of Ellie's has gone his way. And that's what keeps happening. All these divisions keep coming. And that has gone like that through history. When you think of all the denominational churches, they all think, they all go off into their own dogma. And so over the centuries...
Well, Abraham was considered righteous because he believed the plain words of God, that many nations would come out of his loins. Paul said that in Romans chapter 4. That's what Paul explains in Romans 4. That's the faith of Abraham, that Abraham believes God when God said, many nations will come out of your loins, period. And that's what justified Abraham, as Paul explains in Romans chapter 4. When we believe the plain words of Scripture and cast aside everything that tries to conflict with them, then I believe Yahweh shows us the true path. If we don't believe the plain words of Scripture and we try to apply the psychological devices of men to the Scripture, that then we're going to go off on all these little side roads and we're going to get lost.
Yeah, absolutely, and that's what happens all the time. And that is what happens.
So the first thing we have to do is fully accept the plain word of Scripture. When Christ said, I come not... when Christ said, I come but unto, meaning only for, the lost sheep of the house of Israel, well, that's where we have to start.
Yeah.
Because nothing can conflict with that. When Yahweh says that he gathers the outcasts of Israel, then we can't imagine that he's talking about anything else in this chapter. So we have to take this chapter in context, Isaiah 56, and understand that Isaiah is talking about and talking to a people who had been in Yahweh's company, the children of Israel, and were alienated and made foreigners when they were put off from his company. And then when we go to Paul and his mission of spreading the gospel to the nations, and Paul tells us that these are the nations which descended from that seed that Abraham believed in, well then we could put the story together. But we can't put the story together unless we believe the plain words.
No, absolutely.
When we argue with the meanings of the words, that then we're always going to end up down a rabbit hole.
Yes, that's very true. Because, you know, going through Isaiah, all the time in worldwide, they'd read maybe a chapter and they put their own sort of spin on it. There was no true understanding. I mean, I made little notes in my Bible.
Well, right, but the clear addressees of Isaiah's last 25 chapters are the children of the dispersion of the Israel in the, of Israel that are in the isles and coastlands of Europe.
Yes.
And well, that's from chapter 41.
Yeah.
How could we imagine in Isaiah 56, if Isaiah's been addressing nothing but the dispersed of Israel for 15 chapters, that he's trying to address somebody else in Isaiah 56?
Absolutely.
But those people that imagine that take the Bible out of context and make the Word of God a lie.
Yes.
And Isaiah 56 is a full indication in verses 9 and 10, I believe it is, that where it says, "All ye beasts of the field, come to devour." How could that be any beast of the field except the beasts in Jeremiah 31, verses 27 to 30, where it says that Yahweh would sow the house of Israel and the house of Judah with the seed of man and the seed of beast. And that's for our own punishment. And here Yahweh tells us whose fault it is. It's the watchman's fault. It's our political leaders. The watchmen aren't our pastors. Okay? The priests, the Levitical priests of ancient Israel were the religious and political leaders of the people. Okay? That they had a civic duty to the people, and in a theocracy, they had a leadership obligation to the people as well as simply a pastoral obligation.
Yeah, well, in worldwide, it was taught that it was pastoral. They never brought the political system into it at all.
Well, in a theocracy, there's no difference. Levites that judge the children of Israel, the judges that judge the children of Israel were Levites, or they were supposed to be, at least.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel was a Levite.
Yes.
Now the all ye beasts of the field come to devour, all ye beasts of the forest, and whose fault is that? The next verse. His watchmen are blind. They're all ignorant, they're all dumb dogs, they can't bark, sleep, they lie down, loving to slumber. They are greedy dogs which never have enough. We always see the doors open to the other races, the tent curtains widened for money. It's always for money and for power.
Yes.
And it's always the greed of our leaders. And it's the watchmen are our political as well as our religious leaders.
Yeah, I see that. Yes. They absolutely abstain from voting. They stress that. So, really, that side of things was just blocked out. I presume a lot of people in the organization had to make their own mind up about that, but
my position on voting is that national elections, we're never going to win, right? We can't make any difference. No, they're all bought and paid for. All the candidates are bought and paid for. But if Christians... If Christians did the right things at a local level, and you can make a difference in your town and in your village and in your district, and you can set examples and you can speak out against injustice at a local level, all politics, it's an old American adage, right, that all politics is local. And I think a Jew said it, but it was right. All politics is local.
Yes.
And if Christians took care of local politics and did the right thing and made sure that the right thing was done, then national politics would have taken care of themselves, right?
Yes, absolutely.
And we wouldn't be in the bind that we're in.
No, it's rather like the old elders of Israel seeing to their local situation on that level.
Right.
Which is what we need.
That's why the news, I think, concentrates on the national level all the time, because we can't do anything about it.
No, absolutely. There was an interesting thing that I just heard on one of the news programs. We've had run down our throats for the last couple of weeks, all this fighting in Libya, and it's got to that they fill nearly the whole news program. And in one of them, a young man stated that he was fighting for the rebels, that he was born in England and he lives in Manchester. He was 18. He's gone over there to fight for the rebels in Libya, but afterwards he's coming back to finish his education. And he'll return to Libya when he's got all his degrees and so on. I thought, how charming, an 18-year-old born here. They're not assimilating into our society. They're not doing anything.
They're not here to assimilate into our society. They're here to loot and to pillage, to get what they want, to use the comfort of English society to their own advantage until they could overthrow English society.
I know. And people don't see it.
They use our freedoms and our liberties against ourselves.
Yes, absolutely.
The same way the Jews used them in the 50s and 60s to cause the feminist and the sexual revolutions, right?
Which brought
us further down the road to the demise of our culture.
Yes.
Then once they get into power, anything that's contrary to what they think is hate.
Yes. But you think British Israel would wake up a bit more, wouldn't you, to all this?
Well, that they claim to know better, and that's why I like to pick on them, because they should know better. They've had this message pretty consistently for over 100 years now. But at some point, they said, we know, and therefore they stopped learning.
Yes.
And today they prefer the honor of men rather than the honor of God.
I think they just want comfort. You know, they just want a comfortable life and be left alone and just put out what they feel. There's no real urgency about things. At this moment in time, we're at last getting the true scripture out.
Well, I hope to have my Revelation commentary available this month. Well, within a month. We'll see. I'm going to work hard at it all month.
Wonderful that it's going to be in print.
And I'm also working on a paperback collection of my historical essays. And as soon as I get those two projects done, I'm going to put together a paperback collection of my biblical essays.
Yes, it would be lovely to have it in print.
And I'm going to try to make them all paperbacks and as inexpensive as possible.
Yes, wonderful. Because there's a lot of people who don't have computers, but I'm sure would appreciate those.
Well, right, but I'm hoping to reach a wider audience, and you know, if I have them all listed on the regular book merchants' directories and catalogs, that's a much better chance they'll come up in search engines, and I'll be able to take this to a wider audience, right? I'm really trying to show that that we can put Christian identity into mainstream academic thought.
Yes.
That's my purpose.
Yes. Yes, that's great, isn't it?
Well, I think it's so important because, you know, there are some people who seem to do the opposite and bring it into disrepute.
Right.
But it's good that, you know, there's a level that you're aiming at, and it's academic and scholarly, and that will cause people to take it seriously.
Yes.
Well, that's my hope. We'll see. So what else is going on? Danny Do-Right, I see Danny's here.
Oh, is he?
He was. He was a few minutes ago.
He just left a message to say he'd be here at 8 o'clock.
8 o'clock. What time is that?
In 10 minutes' time.
Okay. Okay. I knew we came in, but I've been pacing the floor for the last 20 minutes, right?
Right. Okay.
Well, where is Bob Erring, man? Have we heard from him?
No. He rang me a few days ago. Sorry, dear. Okay.
No, do continue.
He did ring me a few days ago to say hello, and then June and Chris were still with him, so he put them on, and they all sound very, they sounded very good, and they'd had a good conference. They were staying on a bit longer with Matthew, and coming home after the bank holiday because of the travel. So, but I'm sure they're home now. He just, thought he'd give me a ring, and I thought that was rather nice of him.
Well, maybe Matthew was still recuperating, right? But I was hoping to get a report on their conference today here.
Yeah.
I guess we'll have to wait until the 15th.
Yeah. Oh, there was one in that other publication. Did you see it? It was rather interesting because there was a photograph, two photographs, and their conference cannot possibly have been too sideline, judging by the people who were in the photograph.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, David, he was there.
Oh, no. somebody else was who, you know, we would not have expected to have been.
Okay. Well, I don't know. You know more about the people in Britain and the continent than I do.
No, they're European. They're not British.
Okay. Well, that's interesting, but maybe we'll, I don't know, now I'm all the more curious about talking to Matthew about it.
Yes, I did expect to hear him tonight, so I don't know what's kept him away.
Well, I usually get an announcement when he shows up on Skype, but I haven't seen him at all. I mean, I don't watch all the time, but yeah, you know, the little pop-up windows on Skype usually tell on them.
Yeah.
Right. Unless he's abandoned 2C line on us and and puts me off his Skype contacts.
There is a very interesting person on Skype. Quite a fluffy little picture. And, what a strange thing you've got on Skype.
Oh, me?
Yes. Is that you?
She's picking on the kitten avatar.
Yeah. What the words are underneath, does she?
Oh, no. I should print the whole picture someday and put it somewhere, but I found that kitten. An image of that kitten, and the caption was, "They sent me to kill you."
Oh, no.
And you see this cute little kitten with its head kind of crooked. And
yes.
It's really pretty funny.
Yes, it is. Yeah, very good. But supposing everybody came with a sort of disguise, that would be interesting, wouldn't it? stay of their
right. own. Oh, our adversaries are very good at that.
Yeah.
Taya should set a avatar here to the kitten, so the other people could see it. Well, it was Tip O'Neill that said all politics is local. He wasn't a Jew, but he missed a good opportunity.
Yes.
He sold us out for them, or he helped back in the 70s.
I was looking at the British Constitution. I haven't got a copy in front of me. And comments on it and how it had developed over the years from Magna Carta right through. And even though the treasonous part have allegedly been repealed, I'm not sure it was legal to do so. And it's interesting that virtually all of our leaders for the last 30 years have been guilty of treason. Or treason. According to the British Constitution, which everybody says doesn't exist, but of course it does. Because it was always set up, it was always added to in times when Parliament wasn't sitting. Therefore, Parliament cannot revoke it, and that cannot be any accident.
Well, no, it can't be. It absolutely can't be. But, you know, they've really programmed people into ignoring the U.S. Constitution. It is trampled upon every day, every single day, by the lawmakers and by the courts.
And it's the same here.
And this is right from the beginning. Right from the beginning of our nation, it was Marbury versus Madison, was the U.S. Constitution trampled upon. What, when the court made powers for itself that the Constitution didn't give it. So this has been going on for a long time.
History isn't taught in schools anymore, is it?
Well, teachers are ignorant, they just don't know anything.
The teachers are ignorant, and because history is not taught with any foundation, you cannot judge the negative or positive effects on events. When I was a kid in school, we learned about Marbury versus Madison and certain other Supreme Court decisions that were trumpeted, and they were trumpeted because the Jews loved them.
Wow.
But we never studied the Constitution. So how could you make decisions and learn about a case that's directly related to the Constitution if you've never studied the Constitution itself?
No. How ridiculous.
So I remember taking U.S. history in high school. And learning about Marbury versus Madison and the Dred Scott decision and several other famous decisions of the 19th century, but we never studied the Constitution. Never mind the Magna Carta and the documents that the Constitution was based on.
No, that's basic, isn't it? I mean,
we never covered those actual documents in school, and we should have been.
Yes.
The Declaration of Independence? Well, I don't ever remember reading past the first line of it in high school. So real history is not taught in school. They feed you some keywords and they feed you some dates and events that the establishment wants you to know, and if you really look at those keywords, those dates, those events, all the knowledge of those things do is fortify in you a belief in the establishment that it has a right to exist.
Yes.
As it is. That's all they do. It's very carefully selected history.
And also, the thought of exams coming up, and you've got to remember all the dates and what you've been taught.
And the dates aren't important at all.
No.
Yeah, sure, roughly. It's important to understand that Alexander the Great conquered the Persian Empire at the end of the 4th century B.C., but it's not important to understand to know that it happened exactly in 330 or 325 or any particular year. It's not important to know that, I don't know, that the first slave uprising in the South was on April 19th, 1860. I mean, I'm just making that up, right? But that date of when something exactly happened, that's not important. That's not history. The dates are what books are for, right? We need the concept of chronology and time, yes. But the exact dates and having school children memorize those while not giving them the foundations upon which their nation was built, well that's deceitful.
It is.
But you're right. When I was a child in school, it was more important to know the date that the Battle of Bunker Hill was fought, or the date that the Boston Tea Party occurred, than to know why they occurred.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
Yes. And even when they told us why things happened, they didn't tell us that. They only told us the news bite and not the meat of the issues, right?
No. Well, I wonder what's going on now, because our Prime Minister has trotted over to France with Mr. Sarkozy so they can map out what they're going to do in Libya. And on the same day, they're deducting 2,000 of our troops from the army are being made redundant. So I wonder what's all going on there.
Well, it's quite simple. If our army and navy and the whole of the military are run down deliberately, then you have to have a pan-European military, don't you?
That's right. And that's what they're planning.
Yes.
Yes. That's all what it's about. With us taking second fiddle to France, we'll be absorbed into France.
And the British soldiers cannot understand the word of French or German.
But then are British troops going to be paid in pounds or euros?
They might not have paid us all the way ago.
Right.
Terrible. Dreadful. What they're doing.
So what's the latest news on the Tottenham riots? I haven't heard anything in a couple of weeks because I've been secluding myself to work on a book. I can only be in so many places at once.
I don't think you've missed anything because we have that. As far as I'm aware, there haven't been any further developments apart from a lot of musings over why it might have happened. But race is never mentioned.
Well, of course not. It couldn't possibly be race. Those poor, oppressed people.
Oh. Yeah, these disadvantaged people.
They're so busy arresting people. I think they've arrested about 300 people and got them through the courts. That's what they've been concentrating on.
But it's all been arresting.
Absolutely. But they're doing something.
But I suppose the news on Libya is the same in America as it is here, and it's totally the opposite to the truth, even to the point of presenting pictures on television, which is supposed to be Libyan rebels, you know, filling a square, and it's actually another continent. It's India.
Wow.
You know, Indians and people from India are actually, getting together. It's not Libya. And then when there was one particular shot of a Libyan square, and they said it was absolutely full of people, and there was about 40 people there, that was all. You know, so the lies are coming thick and fast. And they're talking about the rebels on the ground, and sometimes you get shots of NATO troops. It's incredible.
I had put a video, and I have to look into it more myself, but I had put a video on the front of John844.com this week. .org this week that is a video about the false news coming out of Libya.
Yeah.
And the false things that people are being told about the Gaddafi government in Libya.
Yes. I mean, what people don't realize is that it was the most stable in Africa, and their healthcare was free. Virtually all the things that we pay for were free, and that their fuel was something like 14 cents a gallon. And,
right,
you know,
this video gets into a lot of those things.
Your first house, I think you were given $50,000 to pay for it, which out there was a lot of money. First car, I think half of it was paid for. All education, and if the education in a Libyan university didn't go far enough, your fees were paid in a foreign country. I mean, we don't begin to approach that level of support.
Well, that's the idea behind a fascist government, right? It is that the natural resources of the nation be used for the benefit of the people. It's one of the ideas behind a fascist government, rather than for the benefit of the exclusive club that is granted the license to loot and pillage the resources of the nation, right?
Yeah.
Which is basically what capitalism is all about.
Absolutely. Yes, it is.
So they've had to cut up this stable country then.
Oh, yes. Mm. Well, he would have helped, he would have come to the rescue of Iran and Syria, who were obviously next on their list. But he had to be... neutralized, first, because he was certainly welcome. And, of course, he didn't have a central bank.
Well, that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yes, because apparently the rebels set up a central bank within 3 weeks of the beginning of the troubles.
Of course they did. They had to finance their They had to finance the rebellion so that they could lay the debt on the Libyan shoulders of the Libyan people.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they'll satisfy it with oil, right?
Yes. And there's only about 6 million people there, but the way they destroyed Tripoli, where a third of them virtually lived, you can imagine that the numbers of dead and injured must be phenomenally high. And to think that our leaders and all their minions are approving of this wholesale slaughter and then putting it up on television as the opposite. In fact, every time it's mentioned, they're talking about Gaddafi being a tyrant.
Hmm.
And whilst, they're Muslims, I don't want anything to do with them. It certainly doesn't give us the authority to interfere and to actually destroy a stable country.
And to actually have aeroplanes bombing them. I mean...
Yeah. Well, they made it a no-fly zone right from the start, didn't they?
It's fully evident that Christians shouldn't sympathize with Jews or Muslims or Arabs.
Yeah.
But what we also can't support a tyrannical government that's going to oppress other people that in the name of the enrichment of the Jews.
Yeah. It's 23rd century resource wars, and we know who's running them. It's the Jews.
And it's white Christian boys dying on behalf of that.
Yeah.
In England, the bodies are repatriated to an airfield called Bryce Norton. which is very, and the bodies have to be driven through a little village called Wootton Bassett.
Yeah.
And while the people can't do a lot about the situation, all the village comes out, and a lot of the veterans from previous wars, and they all stand in silence.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't do anything at the moment. We've lost control, but they make it very obvious that, you know, they take this seriously and they're not going to allow it to be, pushed under so that people are not aware. So to such an extent that they've now tried to, they said it was the last repatriation through Wootton Bassett last week, or this week.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're going to try and route it a different way. But I would imagine that, you know, the British people will still pay their respects and also, you know, make it known that they're taking all this into account.
I hope they are.
I'm afraid it's all that they can do at the moment.
Yes, because they're not going to go through the village with the new place. They want to circumvent the village. So there's no, there won't be any pictures of it at all.
That's right. That's right.
It's awful.
Yeah, so they can sort of criticize war, in effect, if they can remove these pictures.
That's true. Good.
Well, that's interesting. Somebody should publish the breakdown of British soldiers that are dying overseas, right? How many of them are white? How many of them are Christians? How many of them are Muslims? How many of them are gypsies? How about that one?
Yeah, they're 99.9% white, aren't they?
Yeah.
And probably not one gypsy.
Oh, I've never heard of that. Yeah. You never them.
Right.
Well, that's interesting because there's a big gypsy camp supposed to be going to be evicted today, tonight. I haven't heard any news. But the people that are standing up for them, they've illegally got on Greenbelt land.
Yeah.
And the court has said they've got to be evicted. They've been there 10 years for them to get to this point. Mm. And they were going to evict them.
Yeah.
And now all celebrities are standing up for them. And there's going to be a lot of people from overseas. So I should be interested to see the outcome of that. I mean, it's dreadful. Absolutely dreadful. And what they've done to the place, the bits I've seen, it doesn't look very good.
Yeah. Well, but there was a scam. Well, I call it a scam. And it was set up about 20 years ago, whereby certain fields around certain of our towns were allocated places for gypsies. And the local town councils appear to be quite benevolent. And they built concrete stands for the gypsy trailers to go on and provided little outhouses for washing and electricity meters and so forth. And they charged them something like, I don't know, £25-50 a week for all this.
Yeah.
Which seemed a good deal when you think of the amount that people pay in rented accommodation elsewhere. But the gypsies couldn't pay because they hadn't got jobs. So then the government reimbursed the local councils. So in effect, a field that had been fallow and bringing in no income whatsoever would suddenly be bringing about £100,000 a year in. That would be into the council coffers. So you see that there's always a reason why these people are actually helped to stay.
Yes. Yes, wow.
And money's always at the root of it.
Well, they're going to destroy England.
Because they've got children.
Well, this is exactly the position the scripture says we'd be in, right?
Yeah.
And we could be upset about it, but we should also know that our redemption is nigh.
That's right. That's right.
Yes. Thankfully. Yeah. Absolutely.
And that's why I think that, you know, we should realize those things that we can get involved in and those things that we can't. And if this is a burden that we're not meant to carry, then we mustn't carry it.
No, I agree. You have to be careful, don't you? Because your whole life begins to center on it.
Did you listen to my Matthew 25 podcast?
Oh, yeah. I didn't miss it for a while.
Yeah.
I always listen to it, and then I do the notes in the Bible, and I take the dog for a walk and listen to it again.
Well, half the virgins had oil in their lamps, right?
I know.
Did I make clear the clear enough?
Yes.
From Isaiah 51 and 52, I think, or 52 and 53, that we are going to have an awakening.
Yes, we do.
Yes.
In fact, I really enjoyed reading Isaiah 51 and 52 over several times because it was so good to understand where it was in the on the timeline, if you like. I found that very helpful.
Well, it's definitely a discussion of these very days, I believe. A prophecy of these very days that we are on the first waves of that awakening. I mean, it's been going on for since the first identity. Yeah, you know, since John Wilson, if you will. But it's been building to a crescendo very slowly, and we are going to have it. Every false flag incident, every major incident that happens in our history brings more people to awakening, and that's what it takes. Is it takes that hit in the head, right? Like 9/11 was the cause of a lot of people starting to investigate that eventually found. I mean, there's a lot of them still lost in that so-called truth movement that's run by the Jews, right? But a lot of people have found Christian identity and have found 2C line because of 9/11, right?
Yes, it's been a real spin-off that, yeah.
And I think that eventually we are going to prevail, Arnie.
Yes.
Without a doubt.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know the guy is saying that in Iceland they've got a new nationalist party there. So I don't know whether that means an elected one.
Well, I should turn on his microphone and tell us about it.
Because, you know, we don't get any of the sort of news ice at all.
Well, it's very interesting that they voted not to pay the debt.
Yes, I was so proud of them.
That's absolutely wonderful.
It is. Yes. Oh, I haven't got a microphone, so I can't turn one on.
We're going to have to get Iceland or a headset.
Yeah, definitely. How do you mean the British hated you? That's a bit of more propaganda. I mean, we might have had a cod war, but what's a few fish between friends?
A cod war. Yeah, the Chinese are going to end up with all of them anyway.
Yeah, definitely, because we've lost all ours. And Dan is right that Norway isn't in the EU, and Norway's managed to keep its fish and its resources, and that's why it's doing its crossing.
Yeah.
And suffer from the charges of anti-Semitism from the Jews, right?
Yes. Yes, and the recent bombing and all that.
Oh, yeah, I'm fully persuaded by that. And I'm more persuaded now than I was when I wrote that article, right?
Well, what's changed? Because I was, you know, I just saw a pattern. And I thought, yeah, here we go again.
Well, it's just the, some of the tidbits in the news I've heard about Norway after the bombing, right? But they're still steadfastly remaining pretty much pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel, which from what I hear, which is good.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And asserting their national independence even more. I'll be really proud of them when they vote not to pay the debt too.
Yeah. You know? Wonderful. What we all should do.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't, there's no one iota of common sense about the people bailing out bankers. It doesn't make the slightest bit of sense. And you don't have to be an economist to work that one out.
No.
Well, right. If the people weren't sharing in the bankers' profits, then they have no obligation to bail the bankers out.
No.
And right. When have the bankers ever shared their profits with us? When they did well?
That's right. In fact, our Constitution says that any law that is a bad law, that means one that is against the people, is not a law. And it should not be observed. It is not law, full stop. And it's actually in black and white in the Constitution.
Wow.
So basically all the hate crime laws and all the hate speech laws in Britain are illegal.
Exactly.
Because they promote another people above the British people.
Yes, and the same with our membership of the EU, because you are giving the sovereignty of our nation to an alien power.
Right.
So all of that is illegal according to the Constitution.
Well, if you can get me a copy of the British Constitution, I'd love to put it on the Saxon Messenger, right?
I'll send it over tomorrow. I've got a copy.
That'd be wonderful.
It's a commentary. It's a historical commentary, picking out the main points. Because it's in the strength of the Constitution is that it's in so many different places. It's not like the American Constitution. It's been sort of added to over the years. But fundamentally, it goes back to Alfred, King Alfred's law or domes. Domes or domes back in the 840s.
Well, I believe they were called dooms in the sense of the word judgments, right, that we use that word doom today.
That's how we got Doomsday Book, because later on, 1086, because the Saxons thought it was a Doomsday Book, and of course the Jews and William gave it another title, like National Statistics or something, you know. But it goes back to the Constitution. It is based on these dooms of the king, and he took it directly from the Bible. So, you know, it is so fundamentally good and strong and Christian.
Good. That might be nice to have.
Yeah, okay.
We've never been taught that, have we?
No. No. I didn't discover that until I came into VI. Because at school I never learned it, even though we'd studied that period of history.
Yes.
Well, have any of you downloaded that Bible Analyzer software?
I keep meaning to. I haven't used it yet. I will do.
Well, there's a version of the Christogenia New Testament on the front page of my website for Bible Analyzer, right? And you can download this Bible Analyzer software, and it comes with the King James Version, and it comes with the ASV, the Authorized Standard Version.
Right.
Or the American Standard Version, or whatever ASV. I think it's American Standard Version, right? Actually, that's not a bad version in some of the Old Testament renderings. But
I like it.
It comes with those two, but then if you download the file that I have on the front page of Christogenia, you'll get the New Testament right alongside those two versions.
Yeah. It's in my to-do list.
Okay.
Why is Danny not able to talk?
I don't know. That's Danny's problem.
I can talk. I'm waiting for the background noise and everybody get out of the room.
Well, hello.
I know we had a bunch of guests here, and everybody was in the room. Well, you know, they're fixing our computer room, so the computer's in the dining room, and everybody was in the dining room—kids and neighbors and friends—and it was been a lot of background noise. So
you've been fixing that room for weeks. I mean, most people could have built a house in that much time.
And it's a little room too. You know, it's just a. We had a leak. We had it fixed, and then we had some of the leak in it, and we had to tear the wall ceilings out and then get that straightened out. And then we get a guy in to fix that and then paint it, and now we're waiting for the floor to get done, which should be any time. Finally.
Okay. I think I could have built a house by now, though.
By the
pile of trees. And a saw.
I need to invest in some tools, so.
It wouldn't be much of a house, but.
I can't hang a picture up because every time I bang a picture hanger up, the nails bend up. The wall is so hard, I've got to find someone with a drill.
Well, that must be a house built in early England, right?
It must be.
What do you live in, a stone castle or something?
No, I don't think it's very old, about 15 years old. And it's an inner room, it isn't even an outer wall.
They must be Chinese nails then.
Okay. Play a little bit of quietness here. So
okay, you missed the whole program. I did a thing on I did 20 minutes on the cursed fig tree, right? That we can't have any good Jews because Christ cursed the fig tree.
Mm.
So we can't imagine that these antichrists that any of them are good.
That's right.
The fig tree was cursed forever.
Right. That was cursed way back in Genesis 3:15.
Well, right.
Fugitives and vagabonds.
That's them.
Okay. Shh.
Are you having a celebration, Danny?
No, it's just we got kids came over and grandkids, and then neighbors stopped over, and we ended up having dinner. So,
well, that's good. That's like an impromptu communion, right? That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. And you know, I wanted to get it done by 6 o'clock, but it didn't. Dinner wasn't served till like a little after 7, so kind of, and then everybody was in the room right here.
Well, I saw your message on Facebook. I'm not ignoring you. I've just been too busy for Facebook. I'm sorry. If I don't bury myself in my work, then I don't get anything done. So the emails are piling up.
No, don't worry about that. I come across something and I send it out. And no big deal. I know you're busy. Everybody got things to do. And
that's Ellen in the email that came, what was doing the rounds today. I don't know if you saw it. I got one from Germany. They're saying how it has been evaporated.
Well, that's a good excuse for the doomsdayers.
Yeah.
oh, it's not the end of the world because some secret mysterious force evaporated the comet that was supposed to cause it. So we were never wrong. It just didn't happen because the little gray aliens blew it up or something.
Well, I was going to say that this pulsar came out from whichever big planet was nearby and evaporated it. And I kept watching the video and I thought, well, I can see what they're saying, but, you know, I mean, I wouldn't know whether that was true or not, and I can't believe that it is.
I would be almost 100% sure that it's just plain bull, right? My BS meter's been ringing ever since you mentioned it.
Good.
It's these people predict the end of the world, and if it doesn't happen, that they have a good excuse already made up.
Yeah.
So a mysterious pulsar from a mysterious planet blows up the comet that doesn't cause the end of the world. Imagine that.
Yeah.
Fill me in on this, Tia. What was happening? We were supposed to get blown up by a comet?
Well, I haven't followed this Elenin thing because I think it was supposed to come near the Earth at some point, but I have no idea. But I know today that there was this email going around saying, well, the problem has disappeared because it got too near this large planet, which could have been Jupiter. And Jupiter sent out some sort of pulsar ray and nuked, as it were, Elenin. So, I mean, maybe...
It'd be more like gravity, wouldn't it? Wouldn't it be more like gravity would suck it in or something?
Well, what I was looking at, let's put it this way, I'm not saying this is what happened. Something came out from the large planet, zapped it, and went back in again.
Oh, wow.
So, and they called it some sort of pulse, or I can't even remember, but it was a bit like sci-fi, you know, watching it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure Eli James will have a similar excuse on December 22nd of next year.
Is Eli predicting? Don't tell me Eli's predicting the end of the world now.
Yeah, he has been. He has papers on his site for years talking about it.
No, I haven't even gone on the site, so I don't.
This was a major paper out several years ago, at least 2 years ago, saying that the end of the world will be 21st of December 2012.
Mm. What is he going by, the Mayan calendar?
Yeah, it's been a major part of his ministry. He has a huge paper on his site called Why 2012. It's been a significant element in his ministry for 5 years now.
My God says that nobody knows but him. So, I ain't worried about it.
Well, he refuses to retract it, so I'm not going to let him forget it.
Yeah.
I mean, now's the time to retract it. I'd rather apologize that I was wrong once than make excuses for defending my bullshit 1,000 times, right? It's easier to apologize once.
It's much easier to do that, isn't it?
Yeah, that's really sticking your neck out when you start predicting stuff like that. But predicting stuff, I guess, it's pretty hard to do.
But we're not supposed to do it. As Christians, you know, we're told that no man knows.
No one knows. Not even the angels.
Yeah, and you can't do that.
To pretend to know is to deny Christ. You're basically disputing with Christ himself when you pretend to know.
I think we're very close to the second coming, but...
Yeah, we can always hope to be close. There's nothing wrong with that. But
within 5 years, maybe? Within five years? I don't know. You have all the aliens coming into your country and, and rumors of, there's wars all over the place. It's an earthquake, even in New York.
Well, there's no doubt all the signs are here, but that doesn't mean I'm going to start trumpeting the end for any particular date, right? And just end up looking like a fool and discrediting my God.
Yeah.
Or attempting to, right?
Hey, did you feel any of that earthquake?
No.
Last week? No?
Nope, never felt a thing.
Oh, that's pretty wild, because, you know, being from California, you know, you always hear, oh, there's earthquakes out there, and, you know, and now they're having them back in New York. And
well, what was it on Richter scale?
5.8. It was supposedly felt from southern Virginia all the way to Toronto.
Yeah.
And in New York City, and in, especially in Washington.
Yeah, that's a big fault. I was hoping it was
it's
a knockdown that Martin Luther King.
I'm sorry?
Go ahead.
Is that a fault line?
Yes.
I mean, I know about the one on the West Coast.
Oh, yeah, there's a big fault line, yeah.
The faults in the eastern part of the U.S., I mean, there's a fault that ran right by where I grew up, called the Ramapo Fault, that runs into northern New Jersey and into part of New York City.
Mm-hmm.
But it's been dormant for so long that now I did feel an earthquake in the mid-90s. Probably in the mid-80s. I'm sorry. It was the mid-1980s, and I was working at the jail that I worked at and did feel an earthquake in the middle of the night. And only because I was up working nights, right, at the time did I feel it. And it was like a 2.5 on the Richter scale. And I remember feeling that earthquake. Even though it was a little earthquake, I was like, wow, we could get the big one here. and that was 25 years ago, probably. But those faults on the east coast of the United States, they've been dormant. For many, many years, there's been no real major earthquakes from them, right? But that doesn't mean that they can't go again, I mean.
Mm-hmm. Ellie says that she was 37 miles from the epicenter, but it felt like no Californian earthquake. Did you hear anything, Ellie? Oh, you did hear the noise. Because we had an earthquake here a couple of years ago, and the noise was the most frightening thing about it.
Well, my son is pretty much near where Elle is, and he also felt the earthquake. He said that his son was playing a video game and said, "Dad, what's that?" And he said it must have been an earthquake, and his son just shrugged his shoulders and kept playing his game.
Yeah.
So they weren't really, and they must have been pretty close to the epicenter too, right?
Yeah, yeah. There's like different types of earthquakes. I think what it is, if you're real close to the epicenter, it's more of an upward vertical thrust, and then the farther you're away from it, it's like a rolling type. But like that one we had in 1994 was the worst I think I've ever experienced.
Was that the World Series earthquake?
No. That was '89 in Frisco, San Francisco. But this was in the valley up in Northridge, out in the San Fernando Valley, California. And I just happened to move over there. I moved in with Gene and George. You know, Gene. I moved in with them just 2 days before that from Seal Beach because I was recovering from surgery. And they were going to look after me for a while. And then had the earthquake. It was bad timing.
Well, Elle's going to have to be in Virginia the next time I go see my son so that we could have lunch.
Yeah, I was hoping they would have knocked down that Martin Luther King statue.
Here, in the English Channel, there's a fault line just where the Channel Tunnel's built. And I've always been praying for that Channel Tunnel to disappear because we're an island and we're never meant to be anything else. That's on the fault line. So it's amazing what can happen there.
Yeah, I think the last... I don't know why, but I think it was like 12 what was it, 1270 or something like that, their last earthquake in England, or big, real big earthquake?
No, we have lots all the time, but we don't. They're probably in the between 5 and 6.
Uh-huh.
I don't think we've had bigger than that.
Yeah, that's still a pretty good shaker.
Oh, it is.
Of course, it's you know, it depends on how long it does shake.
Yes.
I remember they'd start shaking, and then you would think, you know, is this going to be the big one? You know, are we going to see the ocean? I think one of the worst things with earthquakes is just you just hope you're not in the wrong situation or wrong place. I was working in an oil refinery. We had one time. We had a bunch of guys up in the basket. I was working with cranes, and all of a sudden the basket just went flying. And I thought the crane operator was messing around or something. And there it was. We were having an earthquake. That was pretty hairy.
Elle saying she has a niece in Maryland and she thought it was the end.
Well, that might have been a good thing.
Well, I imagine, this, you know, most people in the Northeast have never had the experience, right?
Yeah.
So it would be quite a shock, I'm sure.
Yeah. 5'8", that's pretty good shape. I remember during that Northridge quake that between, because there wasn't nothing else to do, but TV would come on and tell us, you know, what the Richter scale was. And between, what was it, 1140 and 1140 and 1245 or something, in that hour, 5 earthquakes above 5.2. We had one that was 5.8 aftershocks. It was just went on and on and on, just drove you nuts. It felt like a train coming. And that's how you hear it. It would feel like a train coming.
Yeah, it's frightening when it continues.
Well, except for that little 2-point something, I've never felt an earthquake. And that just shook the building a little bit, just a little rumble. So.
Well, the one we had here was 1 o'clock in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And the bedroom was pitch black. And suddenly there was this horrendous noise. And then the whole house and the bed was shaking. And I got up out of bed thinking, I must get out of the house. But seriously, I reached into the wardrobe to get something to put on. Which probably, you know, something more serious might not have been a good idea, but by the time I got downstairs, it stopped, so it can only have gone on for about 10 or 12 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
But the noise was horrendous. I've never heard any noise like it, and that was so far.
And the thing about it is sometimes they knock all the electricity out, and it's pretty dark out there when there's no street lamps. It's amazing.
Yes, it's the disorientation, isn't it, in effect?
Oh, wow, geez, I couldn't believe how dark it was there and where we were in Northridge.
We live without street lamps here, and it's pitch black outside.
Yeah, and, I mean, it's, and then hearing the people, and, we were in an apartment there on the third, or on the ground floor, and there was two apartments above us. Been hearing all these people screaming and ladies screaming and hollering, getting the babies, and just very chaotic.
Think the lack of street lamps actually keeps the crime down.
Yeah, it could be. Don't know, but there was a lot going on. The stores got looted out. That was
with no alarms or anything.
So, I mean,
the criminals know there's no alarms. There's nobody to turn a light on. There's... that they're gonna loot.
And they, you know, it's funny, the three things that were stolen the most, or the fastest to go, was water, batteries, and candles.
Oh, yeah, ahead of big screen TVs? Wow.
Yeah. Yep, that was the first thing. But then, you know, then the Mexicans started in on looting and everything like that. They had a big problem with that. It was really something. They couldn't even bring in these relief trucks because our water got knocked out. And they tried to jump the relief trucks with the water and stuff. And these are like illegal aliens. It was just like a madhouse. And finally, they had to bring in, you know, the police and everything to try to distribute the water without these people jumping in and trying to grab everything. And it
wasn't, well, that's how they act. They're animals.
It was all these Mexicans, and a lot of them were illegals. That's a fact.
That's how they're always going to act.
And they got on TV, I remember, and they were saying in the news how this is the United States of America, and we should have the aid, and we should have first aid, and we should have all these supplies and everything right away because it's the United States, and what's the matter with this country? Oh, it would burn you up.
What year was that then, Daniel?
That was in, January of 1994. January 17th, I believe. 4:31 in the morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, really. It just, and here we have senior citizens and everything that just lost their homes. Because it really done a lot of devastation. There was more devastation than what the media even put out, because we drove around, Jean and her husband George, friends of ours, we drove around the day after, and it was just absolutely awful. People living outside in tents and blankets and blankets for making tents out of blankets. It was really bad.
How is George Snyder?
He's doing pretty good.
Did he ever make it to my website?
I don't know. I told him about it.
Okay.
And I'll probably be talking to him. I email him back and forth. So.
Good.
I'll ask him again. And who else was it that I was telling about? Somebody else. I don't know right now, but. But yeah, old George is doing all right. I think George is about 78 now. And
well, Jean was about 78 when she passed, and he was 5 years younger.
Right. Yep. I was gonna say. So.
And she passed about 4 years ago, so he's real close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, their birthdays were on. They both celebrated birthdays on the 21st of July. 21st of July. That's funny.
In fact, she'll be gone 5 years in November.
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was 2006.
Yeah. Well, I didn't know. We lost contact there, so I didn't. And then
right. She actually passed on the 10th anniversary of my being in prison.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's why I remember the date.
Hmm.
Weird,
yeah,
right?
She was quite a gal. Gee. She'd go up to all these people, you know, white people and everything, and just start talking about the Christian identity message to them. And, you know,
yeah, well, that's great. That's how people should be.
Yeah, anywhere we went, anywhere we were, you know, we would...
They should speak to people about Christian identity as if it is the only truth, period.
Right. I just couldn't get over it. And she was a very good speaker. I mean, she knew how to talk with people. And I don't know. She was a good friend of mine. She and George really helped me out. I got in a big jam with the IRS, and she was the only one that helped me, you know, type up papers and get a hold of people that could help me and all this kind of stuff. So I just would never forget that. But that was some really rough days. Living on $54 every 2 weeks or something like that, they garnish my wages and everything.
Wow. Yeah, the IRS is merciless, that's for sure.
Oh. I was so... Go ahead.
I was going to say, there was a situation here, somebody brought it to my attention, just this last week, about overpayments here. This isn't IRS, but it's benefits. Overpayments to claimants. And 10 people were actually overpaid £2 million by bundling benefits stuff.
My gosh.
I mean, one person was overpaid $240,000. And listen to this. Get this. They're paying it off back to the government at £9 a week.
Wow. There, oh dear.
And it would take 460 odd years to get out.
Wow.
I mean, it's ludicrous.
Well,
that sounds like some kind of sweetheart deal to me. Something's up with that.
But you can pay over here now. You can pay back, say, for instance, your credit card. You can pay the bank £1 a week. That's all you have to pay them.
Wow.
As long as you can, you show that. Well, as long as you make that £1 payment a month or a week, you can do that.
Wow.
If you're claiming hard times, yeah.
Well, what is the difference? I think between a debt. That a financial institution is actually taking a risk, a known risk, when they loan you money, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big difference between that and the welfare system, which is the goodwill of the people, right?
Mm-hmm.
And these people are actually cheating the welfare system.
When somebody puts thousands of pounds into your bank account that you know you don't qualify for, and you accept it, that's criminal.
Mm-hmm. Well, here it would be treated as criminal, I know that.
But, you know, the thing about it is somebody that's hurting for the money, and they have kids and all that stuff to feed, and you know, they just believe it's like finding money in the street. Well, I guess God wants me to have it.
Well, what if I work for a social services agency and I'm going to put $100,000 into your account? You see what I mean? Mm-hmm. There's something more to that story than meets the eye, I'm sure.
Oh, well, it was the Freedom of Information Act, which enabled the Taxpayers Alliance to get out this information, because they knew that the benefits agencies were so disorganized. But, I mean, you might be right that there's a lot of things going on, and I only gave one example, but that there were lots and lots of them where people were overpaid, and whether it's a sort of computer or what, I don't know.
I'm saying is that disorganization is a way for bureaucrats to shirk the problem and for other people to take advantage of it, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just like Social Security. They'll give you, when you first start, they'll give you a pretty big amount of money that some of that money has to be paid. Like, I worked for a company that, they paid, I didn't, when I got hurt, I still got paid, it was, injury pay or whatever, but when you get the Social Security starts, you're supposed to pay that company, you have to pay them back. Well, then Social Security gives you a check in, I don't know, an amount, maybe $50,000, but you got to pay back $49,000 to the company that you were getting long-term disability from. And that's very tempting, that $50,000 in front of you, thinking, you know, and they give you a little note with that, that you better, you know, you better pay back the debt to your company that's put you on that long-term disability, or you're going to be in a lot of trouble. And I'm sure there's a lot of people that say, hey, you know what, forget about that. I think I'll just take the cash. So,
yeah.
But you have to pay them, you know, you have to pay that money back.
There is just another possibility, and this is my cynical mind, that they do allow this to be made known so that then they can increase their debt collecting powers. So in other words, that they might bring in some legislation that they can turn up on your doorstep and say, well, the house is mine, you know,
yeah,
that sort of thing.
Well,
I don't know.
You know, it's just like that in the States there, that bailout that our Kenyan president and everything agreed to a couple of years ago. I think it was over $3 trillion. Well, there was over $3 trillion, or was it? I think $1 trillion was missing. And I believe it was Congressman Ron Paul that asked the Bianchi, the head of the Federal Reserve, you know, where is this money? What happened to this? I think it was $3 trillion. And what happened to this?
That was Rumsfeld in the Pentagon, $3 trillion missing. He said they just didn't know where it went.
They didn't know where it happened.
They didn't account, even attempt to account for it.
Right. That's just absolutely amazing. Yeah, and they.
But we know where it went.
And they just said, I don't know. I don't know what happened to it. $3 trillion. I mean. How do you lose $3 trillion? What happened to that? Well, we know. It went to Israel.
Yeah.
Some bank account over there somewhere. Lost.
I'm sure it went to a whole collection of Jews, right?
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah.
That have been looting and pillaging our country for 100 years.
Jeez.
Yeah, that's very good, isn't it?
But that's all right. We're going to cancel the debt soon.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
that's all you do. Just like Yahweh's laws, you know, in the seventh year, you just wipe out all debt. That's it. How simple it is. Just wipe it out. So.
Well, we're going to cancel the debt, and we're going to pack all the Jews in a Volkswagen and send them on a nice long vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. Do we know when the next Jubilee year is?
No.
What?
No. I don't care how many British Israel mathematicians there are, we can't figure it out.
I tried to figure that out, too. I tried to figure out from the time of coming out of Egypt till now. And it's pretty hard.
Even the ancients don't agree on a chronology. It's the way all the various nations counted the reigns of their kings. Some counted calendar years. Some of them counted... you know, only the full years, and it can't be told. It's so confusing. And even the ancients, Theodore Siculus gives a general chronology that's 3 years off of mainstream chronologies. That's why when I'm off a year or 2 years in interpreting prophecy, it doesn't bother me.
Yeah.
Because we can't know exactly the calendars. It just can't be told. I mean, a lot of people, Charles Totten thought that he could get, you know, right to the minute, the date of creation. And that's nice, and it's, you know, it shows that the man had great faith, and he was a rather intelligent man, but he was off track with that. I'm sorry. I'd have a few issues with him.
Yeah. You would have to... I think what you'd have to do with that is, as a nation, you would have to just start your calendar for these feasts and stuff like that, and the Sabbath, National Sabbath Day, and all that kind of stuff. You just have to do it as a nation in order for it to work properly. Everybody would have to do it like that.
Well, you can work out the feast days, because the equinoxes are the beginning of the year, and then count from there. I don't have any problem with that.
Well, you can, but even then there would be arguments about what exactly what meant, right? And we could try and we could come close, but there's always going to be some question.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I agree.
That's what I was saying. That you'd have to, people would have to agree. This is the way you're gonna, we're going to start. This is the way we're going to do it, and you'd have to do it that way. So I don't know. I've tried.
Well, when the time comes, we will know. So I don't worry about it, right?
Yeah. I mean, I've tried that doing the Sabbath on the Sunday thing over here because a lot of stuff over here in Northern Ireland, everything is closed on Sunday, but it just doesn't work out. You know, so I myself personally, I keep the Sabbath on Saturday now, like I always did, but it just, I don't know.
Well, funnily enough, I keep the Sabbath on a Monday now.
Yeah.
From the parlor. It's just by the count, whatever day it is, that's, you know, I think as the Sabbath, but it changes as the year goes on.
Mm. Well, I'm of the opinion that it at least changes at the beginning of every year because of the equinox. That's
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And then besides which, since we can't be start really positive, at least I can't get my head around it, it's one's intention to honour and to set that day aside, isn't it?
Well, that's why, you know, there's a lot of guys that think they're smart. And I'm not saying they're dumb, but they think they're smart. They think that they could figure it out. They can know exactly when the Sabbath day is because they can figure it out right from the Bible. And you know what? I've looked and have wrapped my head around all the biblical scriptures that have to do with the calendar, and that's exactly why I don't get involved in calendar disputes. Because no matter how you think you got to figure it out, somebody's going to come across the scripture, and they're all there. Somebody's going to come across the scripture that throws what you think you got figured out into doubt.
Yeah.
Or how do you notice? How can you be absolutely positive of this postulation? And they'll show that you're postulating something, that you have to guess on something, and then there can always be that monkey wrench thrown into your system where you could doubt it.
Right, yeah.
So until we're told exactly how the calendar worked, it's not going to be told.
Yeah.
Well, we can't say. Well, we could come up with schemes that we know are close, and you know something. All that matters is that we're comfortable with them. That's all that matters, because the scripture says not to let any man judge you concerning feasts and new moons and Sabbaths, because Paul knew that these things were going to be a matter of contention.
Right. Yeah. I think whatever works for you.
That's why I say, if I go to Judith's house and she celebrates a Saturday Sabbath, I'm in her house, I'm going to keep my mouth shut and celebrate a Saturday Sabbath. And when I go to Danny's house and he does a Sunday Sabbath, I'm going to keep my mouth shut. I'm in Danny's house, so I'll do a Sunday Sabbath. And love for one's brother is more important than being divided over what day you celebrate the Sabbath on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It worked out for me on Saturday because when I was, of course, those days when I was working, it worked out great. Because when I was finished up on a Friday, you know, you're tired, you had your work, your week and everything, and you just don't want to be bothered, and it worked out. It always works out great for me on Saturday.
Well, right. If that's what's comfortable with you, I would say that's fine. And no man can judge you. But you have a lot of fleshly people in identity, especially because they think they've learned something because they've learned identity. And you got a lot of fleshly people that would beat their brethren over the head for not celebrating the Sabbath on this day or on that day, or for not having the Passover on that day instead of on this day. It's crazy.
Yeah, I've come across those people.
And we do have some whack job ideas that we have to dismiss, like the noon to noon day. That's just mad. That's just totally mad.
Yeah.
But aside from that, we shouldn't argue over the days. And we shouldn't argue over a lot of other things that are really, in the long run, the communion and love for one's brother is more important.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You guys, I'll be right back.
Yes, I couldn't block out the I couldn't block out the sound when I left just now. I wondered if it had changed. You know,
there was a little feedback, but it was negligible.
Right.
That's okay. Did you got to right click on your name and click revoke talk power? You could do that. That would be the nuclear option, more or less, right?
Right.
But you could mute. You could also press the mute button. It is the easiest way. There's a mute button at the top of the screen in the little row of icons.
Yeah.
And just shut your own microphone off.
Oh, right. Okay.
And that's pretty simple.
Right. I've had a very hectic 2 days. I've had visitors for 2 days running. My granddaughter came today, told me a few things on the computer, which I was very grateful for. And
is this a 12-year-old?
No, she's 20.
I'm only joking.
Yes, well, she probably knew as much when she was 12. So she told me a few things, and I had a fish that we had to, it was so big for the fish bowl that we managed to take it to an aquarium.
I thought it was supposed to be in the frying pan when it's too big for the fish bowl.
Well, they're clean fish. You can eat old fish. They're clean. I mean... But they gave me 2 little tiddlers, so I've started again.
You're a glutton for punishment.
Yes. So, well, it's good of him. I said, I need to find somebody with a pond. You know, my pond fish, it's outgrown the tank.
Oh, you should have sent it to me.
Have you got a pond, Judy?
Oh, yes. And I have a regular visitor over Helen.
Oh, well.
No, last time he came, he got a goal. First time in about 20 years he managed to actually get a fish. And it was a few foot long golden oyster. And he got it in his mouth. He couldn't fly with it, so we dragged it off him again.
Wow.
But by that time it was dead, unfortunately.
Wow. 2 foot long. Wow.
Oh, yeah. They grow to quite a size. But we're always taking in, you know, people, shellfish and things like that.
Are you? Oh, yeah. Wow. Oh, I'm going to that. Put it in with a quiet heart. It's very huge.
Well, that sounds like quite a bit of effort to pack up a goldfish to send to somebody to put in the pot. The frying pan would be a lot easier.
Yeah.
Tammy decided which horse to buy. She bought them all.
She bought both of them. Very good. I like her horse videos. Her riding videos. Show them out riding. Very cowboyish.
That would be cowgirlish.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Excuse me.
Even Tammy corrected you.
Oops, I didn't watch that one. Yeah, I remember at my dad's house up there in Northern California, a lot of cattle country, cowboy country, whatever you want to call it, in September, the latter part of September, they'd have the roundups, and they would run the cattle behind my dad's property and over to the holding areas. And I mean, the cattle would come for almost a week. You'd see it start, and you see the duck in Georgia, and then just nothing but cattle. And the cowboys, and it's just like you would think that you were back in the 1800s.
Tammy, where's your dad? I thought for sure he'd be here today. He probably forgot about it. That's okay. I had Tammy's dad on Talk Show a couple of weeks ago. Don Spears program.
Good. That's
good. That's the one where Jeremy came in at the end.
Yes.
Yeah. No, it's good. It's very interesting.
Yeah, it was different. It was good, I thought. People liked it. I got some good feedback. They like hearing edifying things once in a while, right? Doesn't always have to be didactic. And it was still, I thought it was still informative, so that was good.
Oh, yes, it was.
Yeah. Yeah, I got, I downloaded that Skype. And that's pretty interesting.
Yeah, I don't know how long I'm going to keep it. I'm looking into a replacement program because I'm not. I don't want to give any money to Bill Gates.
Right.
I can't. And Microsoft bought Skype. And I might be stuck with it for another year because it's up this month, I think. And I haven't been able to replace it yet.
Yeah, it's pretty good. The only one actually I ever so far now. My brother up in Idaho, he and I would talk back and forth, but I just I don't get on it a lot. But so I tried ICE a couple times and. Let's see. I think Tia, this morning, but you were busy.
Yep, I was with you.
I didn't have my hair done this morning, so I, you know, I had. I'm just kidding. I get my cup of tea in the morning, you know, and sit down and see what's going on in the world.
Well, would you excuse me? I'm going to say goodnight to everybody.
Okay.
Good night, Dorcas.
Yeah, sorry to leave you, but there you are. I'm all in. Sorry.
Okay.
Good night.
Good night.
Yeah.
Good night. Yeah.
What else do we have? We have to have something else.
Well, I think we can straighten out the situation in the world and
yeah, right.
Get it back on track again.
It's going to straighten out itself real soon, I pray.
<Yeah. clears throat> Hey, Bill, did you get any more planting done?
No, I'm hoping to get some spinach in this week so I could get a quick spinach crop.
Mm-hmm.
But well, another quick spinach crop. That grows pretty fast.
Yeah, I planted some. I just planted a bunch of that salad bowl lettuce, and I mean it just grows like crazy. And you can cut it off. You know, you nip it off there.
It doesn't come again, isn't it?
Yeah, it just keeps coming. I mean, it's great. It's like the best crop I've had so far, and.
And the red one is really tasty, the red one.
Oh, is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And my stick onions that I planted. I planted them like in April, and nothing happened, and now all of a sudden they're growing. So they're coming in pretty good. And well, I harvest my carrots. So
I have to admit, I the part of my garden, the two rows of my garden where I grew the arugula, I let run over with weeds because I hadn't replaced it with it with anything after I harvested it. And I was out there, and the squash grew into that area. So now I have all squash in the weeds, which is fine because the animals won't see them, right? I was out picking squash yesterday, and I could smell the arugula, and I couldn't tell the part of the weed, so I couldn't pick it, but I could smell it.
Mm.
More arugula must have come up after I picked it all.
Mm-hmm.
I just can't get it because I can't tell it from the weeds. So I'm going to clear an area and try to, right there, and try to plant some more spinach.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, do you have a problem with slugs?
Do I have a problem with what? Slugs? No. I have tons of slugs. I have way too many slugs. I don't believe how many slugs I have.
Spray them with that garlic water.
Garlic, I was just going to say, a garlic wash is the answer.
Yeah. Okay, that's interesting.
You take garlic and crush it and put it in water for, leave it overnight. And then strain the garlic out and use that water to spray your plants. I've tried it, you know, and it works.
Interesting.
It's very powerful.
Yeah, I can't believe it.
The only thing I know that deals with slugs naturally.
Good. Mm-hmm. Then I'll remember that next year, that's for sure.
It's real simple. It's a natural. And I thought maybe that your vegetables would taste garlicky, but they don't.
Well, there wouldn't be a problem with that because I like garlic.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that.
So, I said I should try growing this garlic because I eat a lot of that. But, you know, I found the strawberries. They just multiply like crazy, almost like Mexicans or something like that. I planted a couple. Well, I didn't plant it. I had it in boxes. Last year, we bought some, my wife and I. And they just grew, the tentacles or whatever, roots just grew out and just started spreading. And I got them all the way down the side of my house now. And I'm still getting strawberries. Amazing. They grow pretty good.
Can you try it? And you actually spray those with garlic to keep the slugs off?
I don't have any problems. I don't have any problems with the slugs. So far. The only problem I had was this little white butterfly that I think you were. What was the name of them?
Cabbage white.
Is that what? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, landing on my everything of mine, my onions and my. Lettuce and stuff. They really devastated, last year they devastated my broccoli. I should have had a net over it, protected them. Because they could really do a number on you. But I think next year we're going to do more above ground planting. And get some of these big tubs, like. It's so much easier.
Well, some people use grow bags and put them on stilts, and they do all sorts of things to, keep the parasites off the plants.
Mm-hmm. Well, I got a tub out there, I call it a trough, and that's where, I grow my, it's pretty long, too. I grow my carrots and all that in it. And the only problem I had was that little white butterfly coming around. It was the only one that just wiped out.
How has the weather been in Britain this summer?
Today
it's been very, it's been very strange. It's been largely dry.
Mm-hmm. I know you said you had a drought earlier in the year, right?
Yeah, but the ground is still bone hard. And when it rains, it just seems to run off. And
well, the American South is just parched.
Yeah. The ground is here, and lots of crops are not ripening because the water isn't there.
Yeah, we got a lot of rain over here. It's different, a little different over here. We've had a pretty wet summer.
Yeah. But wouldn't the island normally have a very high rainfall?
Yeah, it does. I keep track. I write it down. My wife thinks I'm weird, but I write the weather down every day so I can go back 10 years ago. And you know, it's never the same. No year is ever the same here. You know, I thought there May was the best month for weather, and then that got shot down. And then June, and then that's, you know, it just doesn't, you just can't predict the weather here.
No, but, well, they say that we've got weather, don't they, and not climate.
Yeah. Did you do that in California?
No. No, because the weather's nice all the time. No one even talks about the weather over there, unless it rains in the wintertime. No, really, I'm not kidding you. I noticed the difference over there. I remember, you know, going over on a vacation or whatever, going to see the doctors or whatever I had to do, and coming out and saying, geez, it's such a nice day today, huh? Talking to people, they look at you like, are you weird or what? It's like this all the time. It's California. But over here, it's a big subject.
It is.
Hey, but you know, I did find out. I think I figured it out that you can tell when it's going to rain or not by the precipitation. When it's about 20% or lower, it's usually going to be a fairly dry day. But if it goes above the 20, say 30 or up, you're going to get some rain. Precipitation tells you the whole story, and I've been checking this out for the last 2 months, and it's pretty right. And there was a one day there we had zero precipitation, and there was not a cloud in the sky. So that's one indication. I will almost say that's official.
Are you talking about humidity?
No, not humidity. Precipitation. The amount of, like, it's like humidity or whatever. But I don't know the exact term for
precipitation. Is how much it rains.
Well, when it's under 20 here, or if it's 20 and under here, that means it's going to be fairly dry.
You must mean the humidity.
No. Precipitation. Nope, not the humidity.
Under 20 what?
20%.
The
pressure. Oh, right, okay.
No, it's...
Well, how do barometers work, then? Don't they work on pressure?
Yeah, they do work on pressure, yeah. You've got high pressure and low pressure. But I noticed over here, precipitation, when it says 20 and under, it's a dry day. Anything above 20, it'll rain.
Precipitation is rain.
Yeah.
You got a word wrong somewhere.
No. I'm telling you, the precipitation here, when it'll say, you know, like, I think tomorrow it's going to be 30 or 40, it's going to rain. But if it stays under 20, the precipitation. I know what the word is, precipitation. So,
okay.
The chance of over here they just tell you when you can look on the weather chart, it'll say like 20% precipitation or 30. You know, you'll look 10-day forecast and you'll see if it's 40, 50, it's going to definitely rain. But it doesn't rain if it stays under 20 or below.
I'm in the twilight zone.
Yeah, see ya. Keep an eye on it and see if I'm not right.
Well, we have an alternate reality going on here. I'm sorry.
I'm feeling good about this. I'm feeling good about this because I can predict the weather in Ireland, and they say that's impossible.
Well, well, if it's raining, I would say the chances of precipitation are about 100%, right?
Yeah. Well, when you get that, yes. When you get that. But if it's 20 or under, you're going to have a fairly dry day. So I think it's just the cloud. The 20% means there are going to be clouds in the sky. And then 30 means that those clouds are going to rain on you. So that's just the Danny Do-Right weather prediction for Ireland. I might be on to something.
We'll leave it there.
Maybe Ireland.
So, but no, it is true that when you're in California, no one talks about the weather. So. But,
well, probably because it's always really raining Mexicans.
Yeah, it is. I mean,
yeah, we say cats and dogs here, but obviously it's Mexican fur.
Yeah.
Pretty soon in Britain it'll be gypsies and.
Oh, they're already burning down. You know,
gypsies and Muslims, cats and dogs. There you have it.
Well, they keep coming.
They show how they're so.
Yeah, there's no ceasing the flow.
Beaner wetbacks. I haven't heard that one ice in a long time. Beaner. That's what we used to call them, beaners.
Beaners. I could go even further. How about China?
Yeah. Beaners. Yeah, I haven't heard that one in a long time. But, yeah, my old neighborhood over there, you can't go, you know, they see a white boy in that neighborhood, and you'd be in a lot of trouble. Southeast LA, where I went to school.
Well, I see that Sussex Man and June are here, right? I just wanted to say hello.
Oh, right.
Well, Sussex Man's on mute.
Yeah, well, I didn't mute him. He has himself muted, right?
Oh, right.
Okay. He stepped out. I'd like to have a cup of tea right now, but I don't know. What time is it? It's 9:30. I have a cup of tea there. I'll probably be up to 2 o'clock in the morning talking on the TeamSpeak all night.
So that's a normal night.
They're coming.
Yeah, they're here.
So, maybe a little echo there.
Hello. Chris.
Hello, Bill.
How you doing? That's a pretty good echo you got going on there.
Well, I think it's because June is on her computer in the same room, and it's going off computer mic instead of the earphones.
Yeah, that would be a very good reason for that happening.
So I got in late because I only got back from Germany yesterday, and then we had a friend staying, and he only went a couple of hours ago, so I'm all behind today.
Well, how did Matthew's conference go?
Oh, yes, it went very well. We were dying of the heat from the heat there. Wait a minute, I'll just tell June to... Can you plug your thing, microphone in? You've got it in. June just realised you haven't got her thing plugged in, so hopefully that stopped the echo. Have you got it in yet?
Yeah.
Oh, that's better. Oh, you haven't got it in yet. Must be in the wrong one. Yeah. Oh, that's better now. Hello?
Yeah, yeah, there we go. We're here.
Yeah, the conference went very well. But we were dying of the heat there. It was 34 plus every day.
Well, we're getting some feedback, but it's from Danny. It's Danny your mom.
Is it?
Yes.
Tell Danny to cut down to Celtics. We just got a cup of tea made.
Oh, that sounds good. And after I drink that, I'll probably be able to run all the way back to Antrim.
Well, indeed.
Has Matthew been on to Bavaria, man?
No, he hasn't. I was kind of hoping he would be, but I guess he didn't make it. I figured we'd get cover.
Maybe, because when we were there, because of the high humidity and heat, he couldn't look through his telescope. So it may be it was clear tonight, and he probably wanted to have a look through his telescope instead.
Yeah, I want to see what happened to Elenin.
Who?
The comet Elenin.
Oh, yeah, well, that's probably what he's going to look for. But I think everybody there was we had some friends who hadn't been to Germany before. And I was very impressed with things in Bavaria and how phosphorus it looked compared to England, which almost seems a second world country when we get back.
Yeah. Yeah, right. I mean, they've been lying to the English people. The Jews have been lying to the English people for 400 years, right?
Yeah.
That the more sacrifice you make on behalf of world jewelry, that's the worse the country becomes. That's the way it is. And now they're gutting America the same way.
Yeah, the first of us was a farmer, and he was chatting, speak English about their farm, and he was very impressed. He was saying that farmers in England are run off their keeping up with all the regulations, but in Bavaria, I don't think they take so much notice. And he's telling me that somebody spoke to them about GM crops and they burnt all theirs. And when you go through, there's notices everywhere, no to GM seeds.
Right, it's America's really ran that down just about everybody's throats, and this, you know, every once in a while you see news items here that basically it's not what they say explicitly, but it sure is what is inferred. It is the gall that Europeans have in rejecting America's genetically modified seeds, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. It's horrible. But Monsanto, these American biotech companies are really trying to cram these GM seeds down everybody's throat. And I'm glad the Europeans, I hope they continue to hold out on that.
Well, I mean, Monsanto, they're buying up all the small seed firms, so trying to get a monopoly of all the seeds.
Yes.
And also interesting there was that they're growing more and more of what they call the dinkle wheat, which is the original wheat the Israelites had, because that's the wheat that was found in the Egyptian tombs. And it's not as productive as the normal wheat, but people can eat that who have problems eating normal wheat, because although it has gluten, it's in a different combination and doesn't make them unwell. So my father friend brought a half a hundredweight of it in my car, brought back to England.
Interesting.
I've no doubt they grow it in America somewhere.
I was going to say, where did it in England?
Well, there are places I think they grow it, but...
they grow it in Northumberland. They have organic spelt. And I buy the flour and bake my bread with it. And it's wonderful, the cakes and scones as well. So I'm very happy about that.
There's a supermarket here that sells scones, but I don't know if they're real scones because I've never had a real scone.
But in I don't know if it's the same in the US, but here in the UK, if you look closely at the ingredients of bread, they're putting soya in it now, and that's bad for you because it takes about 3 months to go through the 3 weeks to go through the digestive system.
They're putting soy in everything that they can, and that's Monsanto, because they've overproduced soy, so they're just cramming it down everybody's throats, literally.
And years ago, it was acknowledged to be GM. So, we can't have anything like that.
Well, I avoid it. I try not to eat anything with soy in it.
So you have to look at the labels closely. Cause
I read every label for everything I buy.
They seem to be putting it in everything.
I read every label for everything I buy. I don't buy anything with soy. I don't buy anything with high fructose corn syrup. I don't buy anything with any artificial sweeteners.
So.
Or anything that says flavorings. Because they are artificial as well.
Well, right. I try to. I have a couple of vices. I'm a chocolate freak, right? But I really try not to buy any garbage.
Yeah, I like the chocolate. I always get the dark chocolate, you know, rather than the milk chocolate, because you don't know what's gone into that either. Anyway, chocolate. I suggest you go to Belgium and France. They make very good chocolates. You've never tasted it. Can't taste better.
Well, the Irish make pretty good chocolate, too.
Do they? I've never tasted it.
Really? Come on.
Yeah?
I know that you are.
You haven't heard of Gallagher?
You're not being serious.
Yeah, they make good
it
chocolate.
It hardly has any cocoa in it at all.
I don't know where they buy it from, but their Galaxy chocolate is pretty good.
Oh.
In a quiet place.
Sounds like a little rivalry going on here.
I know it. I know it. It's like the beach.
Is your puppy fancy does you good?
I like that Galaxy chocolate. It's pretty nice. Very creamy.
But it doesn't taste like chocolate.
Well, it's not chocolate, but
it's about 25%, I think.
Yeah, and I always bring it back to California with me. I don't know whether they like it because it's free. I don't know. I think it's very good. We used to sell a lot of it at the cafe, Galaxy Chocolate.
Well, I think until you've tasted the real chocolate, you can't really say. The thing would be to have all different chocolates, the real chocolate, and say French and Belgian chocolates, and English Cadbury and what have you, and Irish Galaxy or whatever it is, and have a tasting competition with blindfolds on and see who likes which the best. I'm sure they'd come out with either the Belgian or the French chocolates.
Can I do the blind taste? Can I do the blind tasting test?
Yeah.
Well, Danny sent me some Galaxy chocolate last year. I didn't think it was bad, but I'm a milk chocolate nut, right? That's my junk food.
I like really intense chocolate, you know, really, really powerful taste.
I actually bought some dark chocolate, and I think it's Italian made. And it's pretty good, and it's like 95% cocoa or something.
Oh.
It's some ridiculously high amount. And I can't even eat a lot of it, right? Because
no, you can't. But it really is something you savor, and it's very good, as Chris was saying earlier.
So,
it's good for you, too, that dark chocolate.
What was different, but it doesn't quench my desire for junky sweet milk chocolate, right? It just don't.
That's because the sugar, I think your body is wanting, whereas there won't be much sugar in the dark.
Right. Well, there's not a lot of sugar in my diet, but that's my advice.
You have those little indulgences.
I mean, what else are you going to have with your tea?
Well, we have biscuits with our tea. I usually have chocolate after the tea.
There you go.
Biscuits with your tea.
Yeah,
you must mean something different.
If the biscuits are hard, you can dunk it in the tea and make it soft.
Yeah, right. I like shortbread cookies in my tea, but they're cookies.
We don't like cookies in England. We like crispy ones. They talk to you when you're chewing them.
Yeah, the shortbread cookies I eat, they're Walkers, I think. Walkers shortbread. I mean, they're real good. They only have three ingredients in them. They only have wheat, flour, butter, sugar, and salt. Four ingredients. That's the way cookies should be. They're from Scotland. Walkers shortbread.
That's right. One of the best.
I love them.
Scotland for shortbread.
I love the shortbread cookies. They're the best you can get here in America, because all the shortbread cookies here in America have like 90 ingredients in them, and I won't eat them. So
another chocolate you ought to try is Ritter. It's a German chocolate. That's very good.
Yes,
you can either get it light or dark.
Well, my favorite cookie over here is McVitie's Digestive Caramels. They are really good.
That kind of sounds like some kind of medicine, digestive caramels.
Yes, they're called McVitie's Digestive Caramels. They are really good.
Okay. Severus knows them. He says they're Italian Scottish cookies or something.
No, the name that makes it all written, McVitie's.
Okay. I thought you actually had the cookies, right?
No. I was just joking because the name is for some poetry. But I don't know if it's written that way.
It's McVitie. It's tea.
Oh.
It's McVitie.
Yes. A good old subtle sir.
Yeah, they're made in the UK. I have some right here.
So don't you have any Irish biscuits over there or shortbread? Don't they go into that?
Well, when it comes to the cookies, these are my favorite. And you have to dunk them, see?
Oh, right. They're hard, then.
Yep.
So how did the conference go?
Yes, it went very well. We had some Germans there also, and there's one, he's Manfred Hess, who used to be a teacher, but he farms now, because he didn't like the political correctness that takes place in the school, so he concentrated on his farm. But he spends a lot of time in Greece, checking place names and relics that point to the Greek Israelitish heritage, and he's found a lot of lions in places and a lion gate, and also a lot of place names, small place names with Hebrew names, and he also said in his lecture that, I think, June, one of the sons, 12 sons, was it?
Gambithai.
Who was it?
Asher.
His wife was Helis. And that's where the Greeks took their name from, Hellenes. That's where the name Hellenes comes from. I don't know if you come across that, Bill.
No, how would we know that Asher's wife was Helis? I'm curious, because I don't remember it specifically.
He quotes a verse in the Bible. Well, it must have been the German Bible. I don't know if it's in our English Bible.
I can't at all remember any of the patriarchs' wives being named, except, of course, the wives of Joseph and Judah's Canaanite wife, right? And Tamar.
Well, he did have it there, and he quoted the verse where it was mentioned.
Don't recall it. I mean, I'm not saying it's not possible, but I don't recall it.
I don't know if I've got the... have you got the German thingy going, Stu? Well, it's in German. I'll have to have a look for it, and probably take too long now.
Well, we'll try to make it a point to remember to discuss it in 2 weeks.
Yeah, because I was surprised, and to quote the verse. I'm just having a quick look, see if it comes to... Well, anyway, that's where he reckons the name Helis comes from. And he's also been tracing the lions across Europe, particularly to Germany. And he also mentioned the fact that how the Germans became to be named Teutons. He was saying that it comes from Jude. It used to be Judah, but I think the D became a T, or some of the T sound, so that's where you got Jutes.
I've always thought that the word Jutes probably came from Judah, because they were also the royal Scythians.
They said Toots, and then they became Teutons, you know, the Teutons.
Well, that J sound, I think, would probably have been a Y in its original. It was an I, and the Utes were, it was an I in Roman, right?
Yeah. But somebody did point out where in some of the languages it changed to T.
Interesting. Yeah, it's not... There's plenty of historical proofs as far as I'm concerned.
Well, I think it probably comes about because the problem went many who were familiar with writing. There was only a few scholarly people. And, I mean, phonetically, Jutes and Toots could be fairly close, you know, and over time it changes, you know.
Right. But they would be the UK or Utahi in Latin, right?
Yeah.
The I-U-T-A-E in the plural.
Yeah. And interestingly, Bavaria, man, on our last day took us to a village, you know, it's a small town called Wasserburg. And in the Rathaus, which is the town hall, the German town hall, there's a cafe, and on the wall was the old door, and it had the Bavaria flag, but it was in red, you know, the triangles, and in the middle was a red lion.
Rampant
red lion with the letters WP. Well, Matthew thinks it was the W's that for Flossenbürg and P, because at that time the states had little pockets, you know, here and there, and he thinks it wrong to the state of France. So there's another lion in Germany.
Yeah, right. Well, it's their homeland was in Europe, and it was always in Europe. It wouldn't make any sense to have so much lion iconography, right? I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever. To have that lion so prevalent in their royal symbols.
Yeah. And, I was going to say, you were saying that possibly the red lion, something like the red hen, was Sarah Tudor. Could have been. I don't know what you think about that. And also, we went to a farm museum where they saved all these old Bavarian farmhouses, and there was one with a weather vane with two lions on. I thought that was interesting. So there's plenty of lions around in Bavaria.
Yeah, well, that's interesting because how many centuries has it been since there's been a lion in Europe, right?
Good point.
And also in Bavaria, there's large areas where there's Celtic settlements. You went to see some of their buildings. Now they've reconstructed them because presumably they found them in the peat, so I was able to know how they were constructed, and when you go in them, you know, they were very civilized, you know, they were very comfortable. And excellent woodworking.
And showed us how the log cabins they went to America, they brought with them, you know, the fashion of this.
Yeah, well, I'm sure. I mean, I'm sure most American architecture came from ideas that the people brought from Europe with them.
And also, wood's a good insulator because when we was, you know, it's 34 degrees outside, but when you go in, it's nice and cool. And likewise, probably in the winter, it was equally warm. And that's because wood's a good insulator.
And of course, the making of these, there was no nails, they were all joints and dowels that used the wood from pieces entirely right throughout.
Right. And you know, the Amish still do that here, right?
Do they?
Yes. But they're the only ones that still do it.
They still speak a form of German, don't they?
I'm really not sure, but it wouldn't surprise me at all.
That's why I think I saw a film or some documentary, and I saw speaking German. Somebody was translating, but whether that was just a small community or whether they all speak German, it was just that particular little group. I don't know. But it's in Pennsylvania. I think that's where they are, aren't they?
Well, they're actually all over. They're in Ohio. They're in Pennsylvania. They're down south. They're spread out a lot more than people imagine. They're concentrated in Pennsylvania. There's more of them probably, but that they are all over. I wish my grandfather had learned German because maybe some of it would have rubbed off on me, right, when I was a kid. But they were, what with the wars, they were basically embarrassed into not learning German.
Yeah.
And my great-grandmother is the last one in my family to speak German. And she died in 1964, I think.
So she didn't teach you that?
No, I never really knew her, right?
Oh, right. Well, I think it's interesting when you know another language because it gives you a better insight into your own language.
Right.
Right, yeah. I understand that German, they were deciding early part of the United States when they were writing the Constitution and everything, that it was between English and German language.
No, that's a misunderstanding. It was actually the colony of Pennsylvania was almost a German-speaking colony because there were so many Germans as a percentage of the population in Pennsylvania. But Virginia and Massachusetts were by far the largest of the colonies, and they've always had a much, much higher English population than German, right? I mean, there's virtually no Germans in Massachusetts in those years, and the same with Virginia. It was virtually all English. And Virginia was all Anglican church, right? It was the biggest Anglican church colony. And you couldn't be any other denomination for a while in Virginia. You had to be an Anglican.
Mm-hmm.
And there was never any chance then. They were by far the biggest colonies. That debate over the whether government would be conducted in English or in German only affected Pennsylvania.
Well, I never heard of it that way.
Well, that's the truth. And a lot of people have taken that story and wrongly extended it to the rest of the country, right? But Massachusetts, New Jersey, Rhode Island, New Hampshire. Well, New Hampshire was English, but Vermont had a large French population. That's why it's Vermont is Green Mountains in French, right? And Maine had a large French population, but Maine at that time was part of the Massachusetts colony, right? And Vermont was part of New York at that time. Yet, you know, they weren't separate independent colonies at that time, right? Vermont was actually a part of New York, and Maine was actually a part of the Massachusetts colony. So that they had no say, and they were all heavily... I mean, New York had a large German population, and they had also had a large Dutch population, but the English population was larger, and there was never any question that English wouldn't be the official language. That argument only what was true of Pennsylvania in the mid-18th century.
All the German people in Pennsylvania...
Well, yes, Pennsylvania had... Yeah, you know, just as large a German population as it did English. Now many Germans, many more people immigrated here from Germany than from England during the 19th century and the early 20th century. But for that reason, today there's probably just as many people descended from German blood as English in America. But the dominant culture has always been English. In all of the colonies, but barely in Pennsylvania, right?
Very interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, that argument can only be... It's only true of Pennsylvania that happened.
I believe most of the Scots, they tended to gravitate to Canada.
Well, Canada and there's a large Scottish population in Appalachia, Tennessee, West Virginia, Tennessee, and the Carolinas, and those states, yes.
And also the French in Canada, where you still got the French language.
Oh yeah, well, Quebec, right? And that's built into upstate New York and into New Brunswick. That there's a lot of French speakers in New Brunswick. Even though that's an English province, right? And there's a lot of French speakers in Vermont.
Well, didn't they used to also, one time, Louisiana was under the French flag?
Well, right, but I don't know how French those people could be considered today because they're... If you want to see real Franks, though, go to Quebec, northern Quebec, and you'll see a lot of real French people. Real beautiful white Celtic looking French people, yes.
But when you look at the old map of the United States, Louisiana covered it, was about a third of the United States going right up to the Canadian border.
Right. And from Montana all the way to Michigan, yes.
Yeah.
Louisiana Purchase.
And I think it must have, Louisiana must have a record number of different flags it's had over its history, state flags.
Well, I've never been to southern Louisiana, but from what I understand, the actual whites left down there are quite scarce, quite sparse, because they're all, a lot of them are mixed.
Yeah. Creoles.
I don't know how true that is, because I haven't been here myself, but that's the reports I get anyway.
I don't know if you, when we got to Holland, the lady where we're staying with, I don't know if you heard about it, but Emily in Belgium, I think it was Thursday last week, there was this huge gathering of pop groups, you know, homosexuals and all sorts. And it was a boiling hot day, and all of a sudden it clouded over and a huge wind got up and a downpour, and all the tents got blown away and lots of people drowned.
Did that, well, good for them.
Did that hit the headlines? And she was telling me somebody wrote in the newspaper that it was the judgment of God on this, you know, on their lax moral behavior. And
that's a hate crime to say that.
Yeah, well, she said the editor or the whoever wrote it, he was sacked, and the paper apologized for having made such a statement, you know.
But, right, yes, they get highly offended when you try to attach their behavior to and any sort of calamity, that they don't understand that, and they get highly offended. How dare you say that?
Well, they're very aggressive, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
And I hadn't heard it when we was in Germany, and she said, oh, well, it's all over the media. So I assume from that you would have heard about it, but especially as so many people were killed, you know, by the flash floods.
Where was this?
In Belgium.
Oh, Belgium. Oh, I thought maybe you were talking about the Glastonbury.
No. Well, there was something similar, but in Belgium. She called it a pop, corner or something, pop corner.
Right.
Some funny French-Belgian name. So I was trying to find it on the Google, but I wasn't able to find it. So I thought, you know, some of you might have heard about it.
No, sir. Haven't heard the same.
They're keeping it quiet.
Yeah, obviously they're keeping it quiet.
Like a lot of that kind of stuff they do, they keep it quiet.
That's interesting.
Yeah, well, especially as this man in the Belgian or Dutch paper actually quoted, said that. I think he was a columnist, and he got the sack as a result of it. But,
and they get. I've noticed a long time ago that sexual deviants get highly offended when you even think that way. That they have a total disconnect between anything that they do in this world and any possibility of being judged for it in a negative light.
And it was interesting, she said, you know, it'd been a lovely hot day, and it was just this particular area that was so devastated.
Look, we had a tremendous thunderstorm.
Oh, yeah, we had thunderstorms in Bavaria, and that was when the weather changed, but whether it, I don't think it whether that was the same, whether that affected Northern Europe. By all accounts, this severe weather was just concentrated in that area where the pop vessel was. It's like a sort of mini whirlwind or hurricane just affecting that small area.
Yeah, that sounds like it's something that might be worth checking into.
I'll have to ask if she still got the paper in which it was written. Because she said, oh, you'll hear about it when you get home, you know. But we didn't.
Yeah, very interesting.
That's my opinion.
It's the most spectacular I had ever seen. It stretched the whole of the horizon right across. You know, I mean, we used to have fork lightning or street lightning. This was the colors and absolutely amazing to watch.
Well, here's a start of it. I just put in a Google search and it says, deadly storm rips up stages at Belgium Pop Festival.
That's me, it.
A storm has swept through the Puckle Pop Music Festival in Belgium.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, that's the one.
Stages collapsed and at least 3 people have died as strong winds tore up trees and pulled down lighting on Thursday. Around 60,000 people are at the festival, which is one of the biggest in Europe. The Foo Fighters, Eminem, and the Ting Tings were all due to play at the festival. 40 people injured because of the storm, some taken to a hospital, others were not badly hurt, taken to a local sports hall. Festival organizer Chakri Mahasin. He doesn't sound too Belgian.
No.
Too Belgian. Chokri and Mahasine. I don't think that's a Belgian name, French or German, right? Said, we have for now put the festival on hold until we understand the situation completely. 2 cranes were brought in to try to lift a large damaged tent, but the ground was too wet for the clean up to start, I guess they meant.
And none of this got into your papers?
Well, not that I'm aware of.
I didn't hear anything about it.
Now, here's one that's 5 dead after that. This one, this is from Reuters. It's a later report, I guess, right? Here's the link. 5 dead after storm strikes Belgian Pop Festival. The death toll has risen to 5 at a Belgian pop festival struck by a fierce storm that knocked down screens and collapsed tents, officials said on Friday. The storm struck in an incredibly sudden way, said Claes, who was there. It was a real whirlwind. I have never seen anything like it in Hasselt before, which is the town where the festival was, right?
So it does look as though it was God's judgment on these perverts.
Well, I would hope, but I mean, I like to see a little stronger judgment than that against somebody.
No, I mean, this is what the man wrote about it, and of course, that's why I say he got the sack. Because he said it was obvious that it was God's judgment, you know.
And then 5 people died in an outdoor concert. And
when bad things happen, when you tell them that it's God's judgment, people think that you're callous.
Yeah.
You know, they think that you're callous, that you're being insensitive. It's you know, what's right and wrong in the world has really been turned upside down, right?
Oh, sorry, it's a pity something like that didn't happen to the Glastonbury Festival. Stop it.
Yeah, that Glastonbury Festival doesn't actually happen in Somerset. I hear it's away from that area.
Well, it doesn't used to be. Is that Glastonbury? the way it has been.
I mean, it's
not actually in the town, but it's one of the fields, farmers' fields, you know, just on the outskirts. And, I mean, I think it's another way of the enemy knows that that's an important Christian heritage site, so they're just trashing it with their pop and all their jungle music.
Well, the town's full of kooks, really.
Well, it's changed. I mean, since the pop festival, I mean, it's gone down a lot. I mean, it's all full of new age places, and also the real history, you have to pay to go in. Before, when I used to take friends there, I used to drive down from London, and you could see the Glastonbury Abbey from the road, from the car park. You could park and walk straight in. Now they've built a big wall so you can't see it, and you have to pay a large sum to go in and look at it. And then they got some Catholic monks in the kitchen, you know, and lots of the things, descriptions have been changed, so they're gradually taking away the, you know, the heritage and changing, you know, probably, you know, there's very little about Joseph Aramis there now. So, you know, it's just another means of doing away with some of our heritage.
Joseph who?
Arimathea.
I understand. I'm making a joke, right? Because that's the reaction you would probably get from most of those people, right?
That's right.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, in his day, there were no Roman Catholic monks. But they're there in all their glory.
Yeah, I think another reason why they're taking over all the
Celtic saints, they are claiming as theirs. But of course, the Celtic long before Augustine came.
Right.
But I think a lot of times they do that stuff. They charge and people try to keep the scum out that they got over there in England now.
No, the scum don't want to go there. What would they want to?
Wasn't it there that Christopher, what was his name, Shells, was discovered dead in very strange circumstances?
Who?
Wasn't it at Glastonbury that Christopher Shale was found dead?
Oh, yes. I heard the name because this was something to do with the, Rupert Murdoch thing, wasn't it?
I'm not sure of his involvement, but I know
he was friendly with Cameron,
hadn't he?
Yeah, also I think he was involved, something I read, with this Murdoch thing, in spilling the beans of that as well.
He had some connection
when I read about it, but I didn't know. Yeah. I heard he'd been mysteriously killed, and they just said, it was in strange circumstances, but they said, well, they denied it was strange circumstances.
Mm.
So
it certainly followed a pattern.
But I think you do get scum there now because of all the... It's known as a pop centre now, so you do.
Yes.
But up before then, you only got genuine people going there. Well, you got very few people because there weren't many interested in the, you know, the Israel message. So it was quite a quiet time when I used to go there in my younger days. And you didn't have all that New Age stuff, and it's sort of gradually crept in and
going on. Sure.
Yeah, and then I think with the pop festival and that, it's just gone downhill.
Yeah.
Well, it's the same. Haven't they made Stonehenge and Mecca for New Age pagan
priests? Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, again, you have to pay to go in there. In my younger days, it was all open. You could wander around. But now they put a big fence around it so it could stop all the hooligans getting it. And then there's a car park and you have to pay, you know, to go in when you can sit. But I prefer Avebury, you know, that's older than Stonehenge, and it's in the middle
right.
of the village, and you don't have to pay, you know. You just walk around.
Like over here in Newgrange, they have that
yeah.
also, and Hilaterra, you have to pay to go on that too.
Yeah, well, it's like all our big cathedrals there, you have to pay to go in, but they're crafty. They don't say it's an entrance fee. They say it's a suggested donation. I always sometimes feel like saying, I don't feel like giving a donation or going into
kind of like the tax system that Americans have, you know.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's stopping people seeing our heritage.
Yep.
Well, because they don't want anybody in England to care about their heritage.
No.
They don't want you to care about your heritage. When you start caring about your heritage, then there's resistance to their globalist plan, right?
But when I see the notice about paying, I say, oh no, I won't pay to go into the house of God. I can pray for him. I can pray to him anywhere outside. I just refuse to put anything into their coffers.
The last time I was in Glastonbury in August of 2006, I remember there was this beautiful English girl. I mean, she looked angelic. She was in a bare feet, the long, silk, like a muumuu, whatever you would call them, you know, like a robe or something. So, and she was there with the biggest, blackest nigger you'd ever seen. And everywhere you went, we walked around, there they were. It's like they were following us or something. I just couldn't get over it.
Unfortunately, that's a regular sight in Britain today.
I mean, he was I think he thought he was Jesus, the black Jesus or something, because there was a few of them hanging around him. And he was walking around like he had his disciples or something.
Well, we know where they're heading.
So that was one thing about Bavaria, where we didn't see any black people. Obviously, they're in a big city like Munich, or München as they call it.
Mm.
And also, they're all nice houses, weren't they? You didn't see all these council house blocks like you get in our country, and that'd be buildings. They're all nice houses with carved woodwork, and they were big houses compared to the English houses. And on our roads, even the main roads, you get it's a rough ride on your car, and the minor roads are all potholes. But in Bavaria, you go on the smallest road, and it's smooth as anything, you know, no potholes or anything.
Yeah. Chris, you're starting to sound like maybe Germany did win the war.
Like we always said they did.
I went on your site today, Bill, about, you know, the World War II films showing the different concentration camps, you know, and how they set that all up, you know, using the media and everything like that. But that was very interesting, very tragic, pretty sad. And I just wonder if any of those people reminded any of those Americans when they said about all this tragedy they saw this. Well, don't you remember you bombing us? Like you bombed us? What do you expect?
Well, the only people that really won the Second World War were the Jews. That's it. Mm-hmm. The Jews won the war.
Yeah.
The ones who set it up, they got the benefits they expected. But
it's interesting.
In my remembrance, there was no call of concentration camps or any, no SS or anything in the newspapers during the war. It was after the war that they started talking about lampshades made with the Jewish skin and all that. Even as a young girl, I thought, that's impossible. So I cut my finger, and there's a bit of skin clinging on. You couldn't do anything with that. So I realized even then it was all fallacy.
But well, well, the Jews just want to be the light of the world.
Yeah.
One way or another.
Well, you know what I found very interesting is in those films that they would tell you who was in those camps. Now, when we watch it on TV, it's just we just they give us the impression it's just all Jews in those camps. You know, it was all Jewish prisoners and everything like that, but it wasn't.
The point is, they were all camps. They weren't going to keep these people doing that. They were part of the war effort. And because they weren't accustomed to work, they found it very difficult. In the free country, so called, we had to work hard.
To hire things for a Jew.
We were doing it for our own nation.
Well, everybody suffered. You know, everybody suffered during that war, except the Jews won. Stalin, he came. The communists got more territory than they ever had, ever dreamed of.
Well, naturally, because look who organized it: Churchill, Roosevelt, and Stalin. They divided the country up and gave Russia the most. And it wasn't Russia that got it; it was the Bolsheviks.
Yep.
And they ruled the whole of Eastern Europe. But people don't think they do. Although I'll tell you one thing, Danny, I never go to the cinema. I don't see any of these foolish pictures that are glorifying the Jews and their troubles. I keep out of the way. Because even as a young girl, when I saw the titles of the end, who was the producer and the director, I could see from their names they were all Jews, but I was going to watch that rubbish, and certainly I wouldn't pay pence in those days to go and see it, and goodness knows what it would cost today.
I
want to call in the money, because I've never heard of it on them.
You know, June, I saw pictures of in England there, where they had signs on buses because all these Jewish refugees were flooding into London, where they said that the Jews weren't allowed on the buses. The reason why is they were bringing over all these different diseases and everything, and the British people didn't want to mix with that kind of stuff.
Well, I never was in London as a child. I lived up in the north of England, but I mean, we know there was a lot of sympathy for them, but it was misplaced, and unfortunately, still people haven't got the truth. I tried to call them, I got the chance.
Also, I remember reading somewhere where there was a shipload of Jews, refugees, that were supposed to land in New York. Now, I don't know. I heard that Roosevelt turned them away. These were Russian.
Somehow I've heard that story, but I've never seen it documented, and somehow I have a really hard time believing it.
Yeah, it's supposed to be a whole shipload of Jews that Roosevelt during the early, I think it was in the early 30s when he just got elected or something like that, he refused them to land something, and they had to go to, say, Cuba or something.
I think that early King Edward had the right idea. Send them out. Don't let them come in.
Well, that's what the Germans did. That's what the Hitler and Goebbels did. They just moved them out of Germany and almost got them all of them out of Berlin. Berlin was almost Jew free.
Well, Hitler had a place for them. He said they could have Madagascar. And of course, if they'd got in there, all of them together, they would have been extinct by now, wouldn't they?
Well, they got
been a white person for the mixers.
They got that little area there that's called Israelite. Why don't they just all go there? What I'm looking for is the films about the German prisoners after the Second World War that Eisenhower threw in the concentration camp.
You will find a film about that. See, you need an opportunity to announce that to the world.
About a peep.
No.
Won't show you a film of how Patton represents General Patton. Because he's had the nerve to say he felt the German soldiers were really the best men he had ever seen, the best fighting men. So he had to go, hadn't he?
Well, I think he wanted to go to war right away with the Russians.
Yeah. And he said that he believed the Allies would have been strong enough to overcome. But you see, this is the trouble. It's always talked about the Russians. But I tell people, it wasn't a Russian revolution. It was a Marxist revolution. The Russian people were the ones. You see, that's the real Holocaust. When somebody mentions the Holocaust, I usually say, now which one are you talking about? Are you talking about the Holocaust in Russia, where 70 million white Russian Christians were not just shot, absolutely tortured? If someone says you have to die, and it's one shot into the back of your back or your front, you're dead. But when they had somebody, they had to torture them, torture the life out of them. And it's absolutely horrific. But people would rather believe a lie than the truth.
Well, they have it pounded in their head 24/7, 365 days a year. The media.
Only the watching TV, reading the newspapers, or watching or hearing the news on the radio, they're always masterminded by the so-called master race. And the masters of deceit, deception.
Well, the real claimers of being the master race are the Jews, right? They're guilty of everything they ever accused the Germans of, that they're guilty of it. That they took all their own ideology and demonized the Germans for everything that they believe themselves of themselves.
Yeah.
Talk about reverse psychology. It's been their entire game all along. Christians fall for it. Well, my first 30 minutes, the presentation today was about why we should never believe or accept Jews, right? The tree in Jerusalem, the fig tree that Christ cursed, he said there would be no good fruit from it forever, right? There's no exceptions to that. So how could Christians ever believe that there could be one good Jew?
Because Christ said there would be
no good fruit forever. from that tree. So how could Christians not believe that?
Exactly.
If they want to try to claim that there's one good Jew, they're basically denying the words of Christ.
Because it isn't wise to call them Christians. I call them churchgoers.
Well, right,
they
of course.
They're sitting on seats, but they're not following Christ.
Right, but that's my point, that they're not following Christ.
Those newsreels, that's very informative.
I still got a bunch of movies and videos to put on that site that I haven't even gotten up there yet.
Wow, that's fantastic stuff. I would have just liked to have been there to hear what the conversations was really going about between those German soldiers and Americans. Interesting to hear what the commentary, what they were.
Well, you know, they should have realized that the Germans were absolutely no different than them in their values or in their and their beliefs or in their character or in their looks, that their genes, but that they were fighting this war against these people that are just like us on behalf of an alien race that has been parasites on every nation they've ever been to, and it's incredible that people don't see that.
It's not out of the routine, Bill. The routine is, you know, just doesn't consist of this.
Yeah, well, it's a simple observation, right? I mean, it doesn't take much.
People worrying about their jobs, worrying about their friendship, worrying about, you know, their life in general.
Yeah, it always boils down to the concerns of mammon.
Mm-hmm. I can't say this. I'd like to get with you guys, but you know, my job, it wouldn't go good in my job. And don't call me, don't email me either with this stuff. You know, because of my people at work and everything, they wouldn't like this kind of stuff. My brother-in-law told me.
Well, okay, with that, 3.5 hours is enough for me. I'm sorry, but I'm going to cut this short. And we'll be back here on the 15th.
All right.
And thank you for being here. Praise Yahweh.
I'm
going to finish with a song from Brother Kurt Egger, right? Thank you.